Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moving, and we want that fight to land on the line.
Fans, this is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Sunday night. Yes, that's right, on a Sunday night. Very rare that we do one on a Sunday night, just making sure everything is up to par here. Anyway, we're coming off a great card, great weekend. Of fights. I mean, in a lot of ways. I'm just wrapping up the PBC on Fox card, the night of the upsets. Besides the main event, David Morrell Jr. took care of business real quick. Like, it was kind of a rough start, but real quick over Cazares. You know, both of them were kind of being rough with each other. I kind of felt like Morrell Jr. was coming out a little too aggressive with the home crowd and such. Looking up at the monitor and stuff, seeing his – or not the monitor, but the screen, seeing himself there. And I thought, hold on, David, you're coming a little too aggressive. But obviously he knows better, and he showed out with a great left hand that ended things inside the packed Minneapolis Armory. That was fun. That was fun. I got to say, since the PBC on Fox was a thing, probably even the time buys, that's one of the best cards they've had. Obviously, the Charlo Harrison 2 rematch and that undercard was damn good. I remember, was it the Ortiz and Berto rematch? That card was pretty good. Or was that, yeah, I think that was the card. That was really good. There's been plenty of good fights and all that, but as far as top to bottom, including the FS1 prelims, for a second there was three straight upsets. So I'm definitely excited coming off of that fight. Like I said, though, we're going to talk the PBC on Fox stuff, the night of upsets. We'll also, of course, talk about Gervonta Davis's knockout of Mario Barrios in a competitive fight. You know, Barrios really stood in there down the stretch. And he took a lot of shots, and he showed a lot of heart. He was kind of pretty much a little out of it at the end of it. If you saw how he was, you know, he thought the fight was over because it looked like the ref had called it. And then he kind of started walking to the side, you know, turning his back a little bit, not looking at the ref or the, you know, Gervonta. So that was over. Then Lomachenko took care of business with his highlight reel punches as well. Erickson Lubin scored a knockout, and now it looks like he's going to, you know, fight for a title or interim something. I don't know. But either way, it's nice to see Erickson Lubin getting that win over Rosario as part of the build back from that shocking loss. What was that, 2017 already, in the first round when he got caught with a good shot. I mean, that's basically what happened. So, yeah, we're definitely going to talk about it. I mean, that cruiserweight fight, Glanton, you know, usually Glanton, like, he's an ex-football player. Boy, I don't know, man. He's going to get tired. He's all muscles. Apoche, I mean, both of them were a little gassed, but Apoche was the one who was tired. Probably halfway through, he did get his win, though, no doubt about it. I mean, win, duh, not win. And Gravis a great fight, but Glatton down the stretch got it done. Omar Juarez got upset on the card. And you know what was another thing? The judges, even in the cruiserweight fight, 2 out of 3, the judges got the correct scores tonight, even with the unbeaten, you know, on the A side or at least house fighter side a lot of the time. So, yeah, that was a great card. That was a great card. And now that's what? 2 out of their last 3. Their last card, the Arislandi Lara, that didn't do much for me. But the one before that where we had a draw with Harrison and Perella, we had an upset, prospect upset on that. Vito got upset. He's now going to have the rematch here at the end of July. So, yeah, we got a lot to talk about. There is some fights coming up this weekend. We'll kind of touch upon that. Not a whole lot of action. You know, what's Tank do next? You know, does he stay at 140 and fight Regis? Are they going to build to a Mikey Garcia fight? Does he go back down to 135 or 130 and face Gary Russell Jr.? What does he do? Lomachenko coming off that win. To be honest with you, I didn't quite know if they were going to do the rematch for sure. Still kind of in between. The fact that Top Rank at Teofimo Lopez redid the deal, and so he can get more money when it comes to a pay-per-view, sounds like they're really in on it, at least, you know, from the Lopez senior side. And, of course, Top Rank and Lomachenko, they want the fight. And I'm all for that fight. I know some people are down on that. By the time that fight comes around, I'm sure they'll be up on it. And let's be honest, you know, Loma did have success in the second half of the fight. So even if he, you know, just turns it up a little bit more, all of a sudden that 8-4, some people had it 7-5, whatever, can become closer. So that's, I'm not going to look at that as some kind of crappy fight like some people do. You know, it's for undisputed. It's not a bad deal. You know, that's the whole thing about the best fight and the best. Sometimes you get a rematch, like we're getting a trilogy that a lot of people are complaining about. But Wilder's just one punch away. This is kind of the first rollout on national TV anyway, or ESPN, that we've seen. I know they were talking about on ESPN Plus this weekend on the Lomachenko for Wilder Fury, or should I say Fury Wilder Part 3. But they had a nice little promo for that. But like I said, the Minnesota fans came out for their adopted hometown kid in David Morrell Jr., obviously, you know, native of Cuba. Got a lot going for him, and you can tell that they really wanted to make this night a big one for him. And the crowd was going nuts, dude. The crowd's all in on it. So they do have now another main event fighter that they can you know, I mean, shit, he better slow down, dude. That I mean, he'll be in the target center before you know it. Anyway, like I said, we are going to talk about a variety of things. There is some other news out there. You know, this Donaire Casimiro Vada issue has been all over the place. We think we have some clearance on it. We're going to talk a little bit about that. There is some details about a Pacquiao lawsuit that may stop the Spence fight. Haven't dug too deep into the material, but that is out there too. So we're going to talk about a variety of things. But if this is your first time listening to the Rope and Dope Radio podcast, welcome. It's streamed live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeandoperadio. It streams live and archives on Blog Talk and Rope and Dope. You can, you know, you don't have to download the show directly there or listen to the browser if you don't want to. You can find the platform on iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, almost across the board. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network, which can be found in a whole lot of places. Why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com? It's boxing, football, basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, and everything in between. And one more thing before we dig into this. John's going to join us right off the bat. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you have, you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. The plans start as low as $69.99 a month. There's simple pricing, no hidden fees, no annual contract. Of course, you can stream it anywhere on any device. The cloud DVR is available. And if you sign up for the choice package or better, or higher, I should say, it gives you a free year of HBO Max. That's AT&T TV. Okay. All right. I'm excited, and obviously that was a fun night of fights regardless. But, you know, when it happens in where you live, there's just an extra vibe to it. So maybe I'm a little too happy. I'm happy they showed Tony Oliva. I'm just happy. You know, if you think about it, although, you know, a lot of people of all sorts of, you know, backgrounds did get in the streets here in Minneapolis and still are, by the way, just because it's not on, you know, CNN or Fox News or whatever. But obviously we've had, speaking of vibes, it's been a bad vibe nation and worldwide for Minneapolis as well for obvious reasons, right? I mean, of late it's been better because of the, you know, the trial and everything like that and the verdict and all that and the sentencing. But the last year, it, you know, it's not something that you're 100% proud to, you know, it's not a good look, obviously. It's a shitty thing, and there's a lot of serious issues going on in this city and in the country, obviously. But nights like this, it's hard not to, you know, just be pumped for your hometown, you know what I mean, and just having fun on a Sunday night, national televised fight cards. And like I said, one of the best PBC on Fox cards since they've done the deal. Anyway, let's go ahead and bring in John, and we're going to kind of walk our way through this weekend. Like I said, Gervonta scored a knockout, Lubin, Lomachenko, other, you know, miscellaneous fights as well. I hate to say miscellaneous, but we got a lot to cover, so we're going to dig into some of these fights a lot more detailed than others. All right, let's bring in great boxing mind John. What's going on, John? How the hell are you, man?
Hey, Chris, great to be here, and I can confirm from the outside, Minneapolis had a great night with that card we just saw, the PBC card on Fox. A lot of action, huge upsets, and I think we got our fight of the year in Glant and then Apoche, so things look good there at the Armory with a good-sized crowd, enthusiastic crowd, brought back some good boxing memories, so... And Sunday night is the most watched night in television, so it was a good night for Minneapolis and PBC, a surprisingly good one with all the action we've had this week. Have it topped off with the best action we got all weekend, and there was some other good action, and it's not an exaggeration to say that with all the upsets we just had tonight, and I think we got the fight of the year with Glanton and Apoche.
You know, and that fight was really interesting, obviously. I mean, you know, Glanton came out and, you know, I had him winning, you know, some of that, those early first two rounds for sure. He was landing the better shots, big right hands. He was really bringing it to it. Then it seemed like Apoche in the third and fourth started, he had like a little bounce back round, and then he got the double jab going, the looping rights, and it looked like, all right, we're right around a 2-2 after four rounds, but then for quite some time, I mean, obviously it was a brawl and everything like that and back and forth, but all of a sudden, Apoche was looking gassed, mouth wide open, constant pressure by Glanton. And in that sixth round, that 10-8 round, was a left hook and a right hand, hurt Apoche on the ropes, head back, kind of like what's his toes Loma's shot when he kept snapping dude's head back. And it looked like he was in complete control. Now you could say maybe the eighth, both of them came out swinging for the fences, and it was just a great fight overall, but clearly Glanton won the fight. And as I said before, it was nice that these underdogs actually got the correct scorecards enough to get the dub.
Yeah, there was excellent scoring by the judges, and got to say, you know, for Apoche and Glanton, whatever both of them got paid, it wasn't enough. They gave everything they had, just pure pride, will, and heart in there by both fighters. It had the momentum shifts that you have in a great fight, like you said. Very early on, you know, Glanton started out real strong in the first couple rounds. Then it looked like he might be gassing. Then he shifted the momentum, and it looked like Apoche was gassing, and he had Apoche about out. And then, you know, it looked like Glanton was going to take home the fight, but Apoche wouldn't give in, and he hurt Glanton badly right at the end of the 10th and final round there. So the fight was close the whole way. Both guys got hurt. You had momentum shifts, all kinds of action. They threw the amount of punches they threw was way over the cruiserweight average, and they were both punchers who were landing bombs. Just a great fight. I think it's important to say it now because you and I are not saying this in hindsight. We said it as it happened. You know, you get these hipster types that want to talk about, you know, Gonzalez and Estrada too. And, you know, that was a good fight. You know, you and I both said it was a good fight. It's not one that people are going to be really, you know, talking about a lot a few years down the road, except for the fact that they might like those two fighters. I mean, I like them myself. It's not that kind of a thing. But just, I just feel like you got to tie that in now because, you know, we're just about halfway. We're going to be halfway through the year officially next week. And, you know, people to me got, you know, when you see a fight like you saw tonight with Apoche and Glanton, they might not be as well known in the boxing community, but that was a war that had everything you want with the momentum shifts, both men getting hurt, both men getting tired. You know, there wasn't that kind of attrition in that Estrada-Gonzalez fight. And you know, both those guys are past their best, really, even though they're still at the top of the 115-pound division. And, you know, maybe these guys aren't sure at the top of the cruiserweight division, but they both showed they were top 10 level. I mean, it's not an exaggeration to say. I even think, even though it was a PBC card, I think they were just a hair underestimating Apoche. I mean, he'd been on such a roll, even in the limited number of fights he had, but with all those all by KO, you know, he was really, and transnationally was number 10, and I think it was deserved. So, you know, he was already cracking that level. And then Glanton, for a guy who was an ex-football player, just performed so well. Yeah, we usually don't see this. He just performed so well tonight. You know, really, it was a brawl, but you know, especially with Glanton, that, you know, it was skilled brawling by Glanton. You know, there's no doubt about that. And you know, Apoche hung in there as well. I mean, just a great fight. So, you know, I'm not saying we know what we're going to see for the next 6 months. I mean, but you know, that to me has got to be the front runner. You know, for fight of the year so far, I would say at this point.
Yeah, and looking at that, Apoche landed 187, probably off those double jabs, and Glanton 183, both of them over 700 thrown punches, 776 for Apoche, 725 or 721. So like you said, way over it. And even that, I mean, the last three rounds, both of them got hurt, both of them would rally back, and it was a fun fight. I mean, I did think it was a clear win for Glanton, no doubt. What do you think about a rematch? Because that obviously already was talked about on boxing Twitter. Do you think a 6-4, 7-3 type feel, maybe a win for Glanton's good enough to move on? Or should they run this thing back and maybe go 12 rounds? What do you think about a rematch? Obviously, you know, let these guys have some couple months off here.
Exactly. That's why I'm a little bit contrarian on that. I mean, I love stuff as a fan, and I'm not going to say I never don't want to see the rematch. But when the guys, for me, it was certainly close enough the way it was a war throughout 10, and even Glanton got hurt on the end, even though I agree with you. I think he clearly deserved the decision. But when guys go at it that hard, I want them to make the money, but I hate to have them have to do it to themselves, frankly. I mean, you know, to just have a war like
back
that,
to back.
Have to come back and do that again. Yeah, I just, you know, I almost hate to do it to them with all that they've gave. And I'm sure that, you know, they want to make the money. But, you know, in the defense of guys that fight that hard, you don't always see this, but sometimes you do see it. You know, sometimes, too, when they go at it that hard, I mean, you know, they're still human beings. I mean, when they go at it that hard, and then you get the rematch, it's almost a little bit like the unspoken sometimes, like, you know, man, do we want to get in, in with each other and do this to each other again. I mean, you know, it's almost like both guys.
Yeah, even Gotti Ward, not every, all three fights
right.
were just crazy brawls. You know, people forget about
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And you saw that some with Morales and Barrera, I believe, if I'm recalling correctly,
sure.
the third fight.
Sure.
You know, and mm-hmm. I and you get
you see it a lot.
Them,
you see it a lot.
You do. You see it where both guys are almost like, hey, you know, and I agree with you. You know, you had that a little bit, you know, in one of the Ward, even in the Gotti Ward. You know, and these were still great fights, but you can almost
oh, yeah.
see the guys thinking it like, man, we don't exactly want to do this again. Well, you know, even though it was solid, look at even Ali Frazier too compared to 1-3. It can happen. And you know, those are two of the greatest warriors of all time, without doubt. It happens sometimes. So, I mean, I'll certainly be first in line to watch it if they do it. But I could see. To me, both guys deserve a bit of a break. I think that they've both established themselves. It would be at the bottom part, but you know, with the capability of moving up, you know, as top 10 cruiserweight guys. And you know, like you and I always say, no matter what people want to think, and people were already saying this tonight, and I'm usually the one that says it. I wasn't saying it tonight, but I got to admit, I'm usually the first to say that. Hey. With these guys just having this kind of a war Sunday night on Fox, and the money is always higher in the heavyweight division, really PBC needs more heavyweight guys. That would be another option. I mean, why wouldn't either or both of these guys say, hey, you know, even if I'm at a height disadvantage with these modern day heavyweights, I'm going to take my crack at the big money and give me a heavyweight fight next. So. There might be some different options there, but these guys got exposed to the fans tonight, which was great. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything more on a Sunday night, which is the most watched TV night in the United States. So that's the thing, even though we don't usually have boxing on Sunday, whenever it is there, to have something like that on a Sunday, you really can't ask for anything more for boxing.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, yeah, even like I'm thinking off the top of my head, the four fights with Pacquiao and Marquez, the third was just a good, solid fight, but it wasn't what the other three were, you know, so there, you're right, there is that. And I talked about a double jab from Apoche. John, that might be three or four jabs in the second. You know, I'm going to pivot, I'm going to circle, I'm going to move pretty much the whole fight because I'm not doing that again. So you're right. especially going right back into it. Yeah, that is
right.
Of course, we're not going to be against it. Hey, that would be
right.
fun. It would be intriguing. But, yeah, why not let them fight someplace else? And maybe it would be a title eliminator that they meet up again in a year from now or something. You really don't know. Or, like you said, the heavyweight possibilities.
Right.
Well, they have a lot of fringe guys in the PBC, and maybe they could beat some of those to kind of catapult them up, you know, up more closer to a fringe contender. And maybe work their way up there. Omar Juarez, undefeated coming in against Riviera, who's a solid guy, went the distance with Bartholomew. I thought, okay, this is a really good – I like this fight. This is not going to be easy for Juarez. You know, the first couple of rounds, the jab, the clean right hands, jab hooks to the body. I mean, he was looking good, except – for that eye that was swelling kind of out of nowhere. I think it was a left hand by Riviera. And then it looked like they did contain that. I thought the corner did a good job with that. But in that third round, Riviera was jabbing himself, and he made his way inside and started landing some really, really big hooks. And, you know, even though sometimes Juarez looked like he was in control in a close round, boom, Riviera would land something big. And that was a back-and-forth fight the whole way. You had one pressure and body work and some good shots to the head. Sometimes Juarez kind of fell into the earmuff on the ropes or up close and just even shoe shines. He was allowing shoe shines and hooks and all that. But he was throwing his own hooks and counters with the right hand and whatnot. But overall, Riviera, you know, with the body work, with the constant pressure, and obviously that ninth round knockdown, I think it was a right hook, 15 seconds into the round, And, you know, Juarez was kind of backing up near the ropes. He was throwing, I believe, an uppercut, got caught. Goosen did a good job of, hey, dude, you always got to have one, you know, hand up. Riviera got the upset. And, you know, Juarez, you can see that Juarez has a lot of potential. And at times, John, in the rounds, within the rounds, it was like, wow, this dude's sharp. He's got good movement. He's turning them. But then, like I said, there'd be times where he'd settle or, you know, or like I said, kind of go into that prevent defense mode.
Funny performance to me with Juarez because, you know, in his prior fights, I didn't thought he had some talent, but haven't loved him because believe me, I didn't think he was losing tonight. That's not my point, but haven't loved him because kind of underpowered, and fights tended to actually, you know, go the distance, low KO percentage, and actually be a little bit on the boring side. So then here he is tonight, and then, you know, you had Rivera, like you mentioned, he fought Barthelemy, and it was really kind of like a non-effort, even though Barthelemy's tricky. So, you know, this fight was a real, just like tonight was. I mean, this fight was a surprise to me because what I ended up seeing was actually a more entertaining Juarez who was standing. I mean, I kind of liked it from the entertainment value. You know, he was trying to stand there more, throw some power shots, but he doesn't have the power. And, you know, Rivera then kind of got emboldened. And like you said, you know, he would lash out every once in a while with a good power shot, and you'd see him moving Juarez. I didn't think it was going to get to the point that it got late in the fight where, yeah, he got dropped and ended up losing the decision. You know, fair enough. The knockdown seeming to be pretty critical, at least to me, just watching the fight. But, you know, what was funny to me was a more entertaining Juarez, and not even going to criticize him for fighting that style because I thought he did need to put on more of a show in his fights, be a little more entertaining. But the problem as he was doing that is the power still was not there. You know, in other words, he's setting down more. He was brawling a little more, but he doesn't have the pop. And you know, he wasn't really bothering Rivera enough with those punches. And then Rivera, even though kind of a, you know, club fighter, gatekeeper type guy, does have, we didn't see that against Barthelemy, but we did see it tonight, and it made for an entertaining fight. Like you said, Juarez, I got busted up early. To his credit, he didn't quit. You know, we've been seeing that lately. Frankly, you just got to say it because it's the truth. You know, no quit. You know, had to go from about the third round with that eye. So that I'm sure that was affecting him too. You could see he was trying to cover it up at some points. But yeah, I was surprised. I was surprised at this upset, like everybody else. I think I like Juarez trying to be more entertaining, but it didn't work out for him tonight. And he's a little bit on the underpowered side. You know, that's been kind of the weakness, and that was the weakness again tonight.
Yeah, it's a good call because when he'd land, you could see it. You could tell he was landing. You know, it was like, oh, yeah, that was flush. But like you said, he didn't really ever shake him up enough to at least have Rivera, you know, worry a little bit more about it. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where he goes. But that was definitely a good fight. You'd love to see an older vet. You know, who's been kind of through the ringer, get an upset like that. And I was kind of wondering, man, that is kind of a bigger step up. Like you said, though, I didn't think he'd lose, but I did think it was a serious fight, especially over 10 rounds. You know, kudos to Riviera, no doubt. Then we had Leon Lawson, who was undefeated 14-0, going against Nathaniel Gallimore, and God, you look at, you know, Gallimore's been on this, you know, he hasn't had many wins. Some of them have been close. Some of them he just was, you know, outworked, outpowered, outmanned, whatever you want to say. But when you look at who he's fought, you know, basically in concession, that's pretty awesome right there. You know, much like we're going to talk about Rosario, you know, going from J-Rock, Charlo, and then Lubin, obviously not on that level all the time, Gallimore, but his resume being, you know, 22-5-1 now in those amount of fights, not even 30 fights, he's fought a lot of guys in and around this. Leon Lawson had a good start. Once again, big right hand, nice jab, looking pretty good for three rounds. And then all of a sudden in the fourth and fifth, some of those, you know, close and competitive rounds most of the fight. But Gallimore started working on the body, started getting inside of that length, and just landed the better shots overall. I mean, you know, you could maybe give the eighth round to Lawson, but down ninth round was close too. But down the stretch, those huge right hands stumbled Lawson. Gallimore was even jabbing and throwing his right hand with some movement where it seemed like it was just jab, jab, jab. Some right hands from Lawson, but he was kind of limited down the stretch. I had it 6-4 for Gallimore. Obviously, Gallimore got the decision. It was a majority decision because one had it 95-95, but 97-93, 96-94. Gallimore, after facing all these, you know, couple unbeaten guys, prospect guys, veteran guys, he finally got a nice little W here, John.
Yeah, Gallimore revived his career tonight. You know, fought an undefeated Leon Lawson, who's trained by Kevin Cunningham, who's also in Erickson Lubin's corner, had a big win the night before. And, you know, Lawson has amateur pedigree. But, you know, Gallimore still came to fight. Lawson, especially after the first couple of rounds, you know, was just not aggressive enough, not letting his hands go enough, doing too much holding, just too passive in there. And Gallimore, you could see, started to sense that, started to turn it up. And as you said, Gallimore started to land some good shots as the fight went on. And you could see he had a chance to pull off the upset, and he did it. And, you know, the other winner in that fight besides Nate Gallimore was Sebastian Fundora, because, you know, Lawson was undefeated, and he's 6'5 at 154 pounds, which we as the announcer said in the right, we never saw 154-pound guys like this until these guys recently. And Fundora is even taller, slightly taller than Lawson, but you know, at 6'7". But, you know, of course, that's close enough. These guys are at unheard-of sizes for 154-pounders. Fundora was the first person to stop Gallimore. I mean, he just ran through him, and Gallimore's tough, and he just was raining shots down on him until – you know, Gallimore basically just couldn't take anymore. So, you know, the winner, besides Nate Gallimore reviving his career, which he did tonight with that big win, was Sebastian Fundora, who, you know, recently ran through Gallimore, the only guy to stop him. And it shows you that Fundora's role is real, and he's a force to be reckoned with, and he's becoming very popular, and for good reason. He's somebody that's worth everybody keeping an eye on. But good for Gallimore keeping his career going. And Lawson just, you know, it was a big step up, but just too passive. Just too passive in there tonight. And, you know, you assume he's going to go on and try to learn. You know, he's gonna have to up his activity level. You know, especially he doesn't have a high KO percentage. If he's not going to be KOing people, he's got to be throwing. So definitely some adjustments have to be made for Lawson when he goes on from here.
Yeah, and, you know, some of these prospects, a message can be to, much like Fundora when he had that really competitive close fight with Jamari Clark that just happened to be here at the Armory as well, where Clark went out of, I remember sitting there press row and I just saw legs. I was like, oh my, he's all the way out of the ring. And, you know, he got back in, though, and finished strong and whatnot, but he had a little minor setback there. Some of his fights, you know, you see him just get hit so much, you're like, wow, dude. But now it's starting to come all together for him, as you mentioned. So, you know, message to some of these prospects, just because you have a little setback or you look like crap in a fight for a handful of rounds, even if you win by a knockout, people kind of remember the looking like crap part. You know, you got to keep that in mind. Not looking like crap was Trayvon Marshall early with his jab and right hand. He worked the body as well. First couple of rounds, really three out of the four rounds, he handled Torres. Torres did have a pretty damn good round three. I don't know if it was good enough to win the round, but he did drop Torres with an uppercut, did Marshall uppercut left hook, I believe. And that fourth round, he was busy and, you know, had the body tack going. Olberton and McCargo. Olberton was controlling the action kind of one through three, I'd say. In the fourth round, there was two right hands that scored a knockdown. Then the fifth round, TKO body shot. I think it was a left hook right near the end of the round. So, you know, if we want to talk about that's cool. Otherwise, we can move really quickly to a really quick fight in the main event as well.
Yeah, just briefly, I mean, Marshall liked his pro debut when I saw him. And, you know, you see he's got some good skills, got some good attributes. He's only 20 years old. But let's face it, you've got to evaluate these prospects. I mean, that's one of the reasons we're seeing them. You know, some people say, well, you can't – of course you can criticize them. I mean, you know, you can praise them and criticize them. I presume that's one of the main reasons we're watching them when they're coming up. So that's all part of it. You know, I liked him a lot in his pro debut. I thought his aggression could have been a little higher tonight. And, you know, I do look for things like that, the firepower, the aggression. He looks like he might have it, but – you know, the guy he was fighting only had one KO. So, again, you know, we were talking about this earlier in the week. No, I was bringing it up. You know who you're fighting. I mean, you know, it's not that you want to be completely reckless, but, you know, you're fighting a guy who has no pop, low KO percentage. I mean, you know, at least adjust a bit accordingly. So I thought, you know, for rounds, I thought Marshall should have picked it up and got him out of there. You know, he had hurt him earlier. I didn't see him any reason really to let that guy go the distance. And then Olberton, he did end up getting his guy out of there. And, you know, he's also a very young guy. He's 22, and, you know, PBC definitely needs light heavyweight depth. I could see him putting somebody like Olberton on the fast track. But he got his man out of there, which you want to see. But I thought he was getting a little bit too much, too. Like, look, you want to put on a show. You want to be fan-friendly. You want to be remembered. But guy was kind of putting on a show before, you know, focusing on, like this was somebody he should have been focused on getting out of there earlier rather than the show part. You know, like get him out of there and then put on a show in the ring like some of these guys do. I mean, it's not sportsmanlike, but, you know, maybe after you get him out of there or something like that. But, you know, like kind of like stay with the focus, especially earlier in your career. You know, let the showmanship be make emphatic knockouts early on, especially. So Olberton got him out of there, but he was showboating it a little before that, which I'm not saying that's a big deal, but I was just kind of like, get this guy. You know, the guy really wasn't offering any resistance. You know, I was just saying, you know, get this guy out of here. The guy's not even offering any resistance. So that's just a little comment there. You know, again, that was his second pro fight, but just some things to work on.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. No doubt about it. And, obviously, the main event, I did think it would go longer than that. But, you know, kind of in these last two fights, one of them went 12 rounds with Lennox Allen for Morrell Jr., I'm speaking of course. And then he took care of a really overmatched fighter, I think third or fourth round KO last December. But this one I actually thought would go some rounds. I thought that maybe Morrell would be kind of trying to figure him out, trying to feel him out a little bit. And that wasn't the case. He basically went right at him for the most part. Did get clipped a little bit early. There was some roughhousing back and forth, which I did like. Instead of looking at the ref, hey, what's that? He just said, all right, I'm just going to hit him in the back of the head, and we'll just get rough right with him. So I did appreciate that. That's good because you never know, especially with an amateur guy who's only had five fights going into his fifth fight. You just never know. You know, you just never know if he's going to be, because a lot of, you know, Even Lomachenko, I mean, Salido's a roughhouse dude, you know, so obviously you're going to have to be real rough with him. But, you know, even early on in that fight, Loma was looking at the ref and finally was like, you know what, screw this. And you could see him turn into a better fighter in the second half of that fight. And obviously, you know, he's had a great career ever since. We'll talk about him and Davis and that later. But your thoughts on Morrell Jr. in general, and then a non-biased outside look at just the atmosphere with the Armory in some of these fights, because when you're there live, it seems louder. That standing room only seats for 25 or 30 bucks. Everything, there's not a bad seat in the house. There's no obstructive view. I just kind of want an outsider's look, you know, at that venue and how it plays on TV, because there are some times where you're not going to have as big of fights. And we know they can't go two guys making over $1 million all the time on Fox. In fact, you could probably only do that a couple times a year tops. And so you do have to rely on stuff. We talk about how it's prospect against prospect, like it was in the co-feature, or you're, you know, in the main event as well, or a solid vet getting tested or getting, you know, testing a prospect. We basically got kind of what we're looking for if we don't have two top 10 guys going at it in the main event, but just kind of a non-biased outside look of that venue as well from you, John. But first we could talk about Morrell Jr. Not like there was a whole lot to talk about.
Yeah, well, you know, the Morrell fight, I thought, frankly, it was a mismatch and not appropriate for a Fox headliner. But then as we got to the main event tonight, after seeing the three upsets, you know, of course, I was like, hey, who knows what's going to happen here? It put you in a good state of mind like that. And then the second thing that helped was, you know, you'd already seen the other upsets, and then Poche and Glanton was so good that there was no way you were going to leave the night disappointed. It was almost like you were drained from seeing such a great fight. So in this instance, Morrell scoring a first-round knockout was probably good. I'm not saying I thought he was going to score a first-round knockout, because he is a boxer by nature, even though he's getting the stoppages. But I thought this one was a mismatch. You know, seeing Canizares against Chavez Jr., even before we saw what happened with him with Silva, you know, Chavez Jr. is just, you know, so deteriorated at this point that, you know, he didn't do anything to stand out. He doesn't have a big KO percentage, so I just didn't see what the guy was going to do with Morrell. But, you know, like I say, you know, get on it a lot, but it is examples of it. You know, I think, you know, there's too many weight classes, so the 168-pound weight class is not particularly deep, and why I say that is with the talent level of Morrell, and he is talented. He's got the amateur pedigree, and he is looking good. He's obviously highly skilled. He's got good size. You know, there's a lot of guys he can beat at 168 pounds right now. You know, like, look, I would like to see this John Ryder fight, just because, you know, we've seen Ryder in against some tougher opposition. But with that understood, I mean, Ryder's got nothing for Morrell. And I think Eddie Hearn and John Ryder know that. Anybody that's got any doubt about that, go watch Ryder's last fight with Mike Guy and remind yourself. You know, Ryder got way too much mileage out of that loss to Callum Smith, because some people thought he won. And, you know, then Callum Smith did not perform well against Canelo. You know, like I said, Ryder's last fight was with Mike Guy. He looked terrible. Yeah, he's got nothing for Morrell if that were to come off. I don't think it will now. I don't think Hearn wants it. You know, he'd just rather have Ryder do something else if he's going to take a loss that benefits him. That's why, you know, Hearn all of a sudden, this would be kind of something Hearn normally wouldn't do. He was talking about Ryder fighting, you know, Bivol, who he, you know, has been promoting. So, you know, all of a sudden it was Ryder. Why that came up, I think this is why it came up, you know. If Ryder's going to take an L, a sure L, it's going to be for, you know, Hearn's benefit somewhere else. Hearn, I think he actually does follow this usually. He says it, but he does try to follow it a lot. He doesn't like his own guys fighting each other, but, you know, he has exceptions here and there. So I think he was looking at a Ryder L if they were going to do that. You know, I don't care about WBA regular. We've been through all that stuff, or any of these alphabet belts for that matter. But since that Morrell does have that, you know, if Ryder supposedly wants to pick up an alphabet trinket, you know, he could take that Morrell fight. But I don't think they want that. So Morrell will be looking elsewhere, I think. I don't know who. You know, he'll be looking at fight next, but, I mean, he can beat a lot of the guys at 168. I think already, even with what he's just had five pro fights, it's going to take somebody at the top of that division to be a threat to beat him already. He's not tested who he's fought, et cetera, but you can also see with guys a lot of times. And, you know, I think in that division, which is weak in terms of depth, it's going to take the top guys in the division to beat him right now.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That is,
but on the armory now, it looked. Like,
oh yeah,
just
yeah.
Want to add, didn't want to forget about that. On the armory, no, it was great. A lot of people were highly complimentary. It came across great on TV, and I think this would be something that PBC would be happy with, and probably one of the reasons they've been going back there. You know, it had the look of the Blue Horizon on USA Tuesday Night Fights, which of course was a good run. You know, in the 90s, and a lot of people have fond memories of that from that era. So it definitely comes across like that. The crowd looked enthusiastic tonight. It looked filled up. It was definitely a good venue. Came across very good on TV, and you had a surprisingly good action night of fights. So I thought it was an A-plus for Minneapolis in boxing terms, and a lot of people on Twitter were talking about, hey, you know, how's Minneapolis getting these crowds, and, you know, why does it look good and everything like that? So it really, really came across well. Something's working for boxing in Minneapolis there. And, you know, tonight was no exception, and they'll be talking about that Apoche and Glanton fight for a long time. And, you know, Morrell's based himself there, and he's making a name for himself. So, no, it was a great night for boxing in Minneapolis.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Tony, the local promoter, deserves a lot of credit for that. Greg Gelfgo, and obviously, you know, Caleb Truax has been a guy that even off TV was always able to put butts in the seats. Even years ago, he actually flashed back to 2012, I think it was 2013 on Friday Night Fights. He's always drawn really well. He's the one that kind of got that thing going, and then Jamal James, and, you know, so now we got a new one. So this is, it's definitely something going. They did have, you know, I don't know this year in particular or since COVID, but they did have a four-fight deal with them. And as of 2020, right, because it's hard to keep updated now with some folks about the deal or whatever, but it was four Fox fights in 2020. That was the plan. So we'll see. You know, I'm thinking August there's going to be another one with Jamal James. That's what it sounds like. That's what they're telling me. So, it's definitely fun. I'm actually getting a bunch of text messages from local folks that are casual boxing fans, and they're just pumped up, whether they're watching on TV or we're live. And they're definitely excited, no doubt about it. So, you know, we've been critical, you know, for a legit reason. It hasn't been some kind of clickbait or hit piece or anything like that. Clearly the budget and things got messed up. They, you know, the FS1 cards are now just prelims. We don't have the 12 other Saturday night cards this year. So, you know, we were asking some questions about that. We were breaking it down. I wrote a piece on it. With some detail, and not with the narrative that we see a lot in the media when it comes to the PBC and people shoveling dirt on their grave, basically since like late 2015. So we'll see where this Fox deal goes. You know, we have gotten a little clarity. I'm not sure if it's 100% factual, but they say it was a 4-year deal, but the fourth year was optional. Which is that like an optional to start the negotiation? Because otherwise, it really wouldn't make sense to just, okay, we're going to opt you for one more year. That kind of is weird, but we'll see where that goes. But kudos to them. Like I said, two out of the last three cards have been solid, no doubt about it. But let's switch to some other, you know, big names, obviously, Lomachenko and Gervonta Davis. Gervonta Davis starts slow as far as throwing a bunch of combinations. He even said that, John, you know, in the post-pressure. He's very honest, like, hey, I didn't know what this punch is going to feel like at this weight class. So he was kind of holding back a little bit. And at the same time, he's kind of trying to land one big shot at a time, which can make you look goofy and swing wild. Otherwise, it can, when he gets it right, it's perfect and it's a great shot. I would have liked to seen more jabs. Obviously, an up jab would have been something he would have had to use with the height thing. But even the jabs to the chest and stomach and the body work in general, I would have liked to seen more. I did think that Barrios showed heart. He showed a nice jab. He showed some movement himself. He showed that he could land in exchanges, and he was a tough dude. I mean, went down, got up, went down, got up, was cut. But he was doing pretty good. You know, this whole, speaking of narratives, I didn't see him down deep on the scorecards like some other folks did. I know Farhood, I believe he had him down before, you know, the thing ended, before he started, you know, I think it was the eighth round where it was a 10-7 round, that nasty right hook, you know, tossed him to the side, and then it was, I think, a left hook that bloodied up and dropped him again. Barrios was cut, had that big old cut, but he did land a nice shot back after that. What'd you think of Tank's debut at 140? And, you know, we're going to talk about the undercard as well, but we'll stay on Tank for a little while because there is, you know, some options out there. So we'll talk about that. What'd you think of, you know, his first performance at the weight? There were a lot of exchanges at times. But some people did have him down, and some people had him like he didn't even win a round until, like, you know, the fifth or sixth round. And I didn't see that. I guess I'm more of the, if you land a power punch and it's the best shot, you can win a round off that even if you get outworked.
Yeah, definitely in the pros. I think a lot of people don't get that. But, you know, it's not amateur boxing, and it's not those punch counting days of amateur boxing. People forget that it's pro boxing, which, you know, the power of the shots matter. You know, hurting somebody matters. It's the pros. But, no, I thought it was the end result was what you would have wanted for him fighting up at 140 pounds for the first time. You know, a power-punching knockout where he's using his speed and power and being aggressive. It was just in the early rounds. And you saw him doing a little bit of that against Santa Cruz, too, even though now he's fighting at 10 pounds higher. You know, trying to box a little bit from the outside, use some head movement. I mean, you know, I think, you know, Floyd Mayweather is obviously working with him some. You could see that because he was listening to Floyd's corner instruction late in the fight, which I got to say, I normally don't like that, but the instruction was good, and I think it helped him. So maybe that's working for them. Maybe Mayweather just needs to take a more official training role or something like that. Of course, if he wants to, he can pretty much do what he wants to do, but you're getting back to
yeah,
there.
Like
so,
what commission is going to tell him to sit down? Because it seems like wherever Floyd is, like it could be like Magic Johnson to be like, sir, we need you to sit down. But for whatever reason, Floyd just runs it to the point where it got a little like, all right, dude, all right, stop. But you're right. You know, when it counted, he did give him. And by the way, UK fans and other fans out there that don't get it, he gave him the unofficial. He didn't read the scorecards and then deliver the official scorecard. So, because you see that on Boxing Twitter, and it's like, dude, he gave him Farhood's scorecard.
Right.
Basically, that's
right.
It. And it was a motivator, and look what it did.
Right.
Right, it did work out.
It worked out perfectly, and it's what Davis needed at that point. He needed more aggression. He started out not aggressive enough for the style he needs to fight, especially against bigger guys. You know, you see Buddy McGirt doing this with some of his guys, like, you know, it seems like he always wants him to have the boxing ability, you know, to get out of trouble and, you know, not take too many shots if necessary. And it was kind of like Davis was doing that early, you know, he's trying to work. But from the outside, that's what I didn't like. You know, he's only 5'5 and a half, that's not going to, you know, if he gets in trouble or something like that, that might work for him. But I don't think that's a, you know, full fight strategy for him. What I'd love to see him do, I think to me, which would be the most devastating progression, and he's already obviously pretty devastating because he knocked out every fighter he's faced except one early in his career. But, you know, if he can take that sort of boxing head movement he's been working on from the outside, especially in these last two fights, like think if he uses that to get close, you know what I mean? Like he was able to get close, like you're saying, you know, by, you know, kind of looking for his one big shot, and you got to respect his power. And then he got more aggressive and he was hurting Barrios and it was working, but, and that worked. I mean, that's going to be certainly quite effective for him, but what could probably be even more effective is take some of that boxing ability he's been working on, and instead of, you know, staying on the outside, staying away and doing some head movement and boxing, what if he, you know, were to box his way in like that? In other words, with head movement, you know, kind of like a bobbing and weaving Joe Frazier or a peekaboo Mike Tyson, because I've said that from very early in his career. I've seen Davis. He's one of the guys I've seen from very, very early in his career. I mean, you know, you hear it more now, but I've always thought with him, you know, he reminds me of a miniature, you know, left-handed Tyson. I mean, it doesn't mean he does all the same things, but just the way he throws the shots and, you know, the power, you know, for his size, a miniature version. So I think that, you know, he's relying on the speed and explosiveness like that. He was again last night against Barrios. I think he needs to get his big fight soon because of that. But I think it's going to be effective. Now, myself, I've been saying it. I've been one of the more outliers, but I wanted to see, and I think they wanted to see it too, frankly. I mean, Barrios, a very big guy at 140 pounds, it's been rumored he was already going to be on his way to welterweight, and I think he probably will be there after this. You know, it was a test. I mean, could Davis knock out a guy like that? Could he translate the speed and explosiveness he showed at the lower weights and at 5'5.5", do that to a bigger guy like a Barrios? And he did it. He got the spectacular KO, hurt him to the body, you know, through good body shots. That was a very good sign. Was able to, even at his size, land the big power hook, that first one that he dropped them with. So that's all the kind of things you were looking for, because Barrios is a tall fighter. I think, you know, even if it's not the next fight, I think you're going to see him. He's going to take big money fights with PBC welterweight guys. You know, Floyd Mayweather, to me, is already confirming what I was thinking it's going to go. Look, PBC's bringing their own guys. They're building their own guys up. They're getting them the TV exposure. Look, it's the way boxing is in 2021. You know, their strategy, they've got depth. They're going to have their own guys fight. So, you know, to me, I don't see why a lot of people – you know, I find it hard to imagine. I mean, Mikey Garcia is already a welterweight contender, whether you think he should be at the weight or not. He is a legit welterweight contender. He went the distance with Errol Spence. He dropped and beat Jesse Vargas. You know, he's a talented guy. He's only got one loss. You know, he started at 126 pounds. He's at welterweight. You know, Keith Thurman's only 5'7". He's coming off a loss to Pacquiao. You know, he's a welterweight. You know, Pacquiao himself is a guy that, you know, of course, isn't a tall guy. Started out as a flyweight. He's 42 years old now, you know, but still, you know, right at the top of the division. I mean, why would, you know, I mean, that's why I don't see what people don't see. I mean, why wouldn't Davis, coming off a performance like he just had last night, why wouldn't he be able to take on any of those guys? Even if it's not the next fight, it could be the fight after that. I mean, there's more money there. Let's face it, whether people like it or not, generally, the higher the weight class, the more money there is, the more people pay attention, especially in the U.S. So, you know, there's, you know, even if you're Gervonta Davis, I mean, I think here's another thing, Chris, that I haven't heard people discussing at all, and this would apply to a lot of fighters. I mean, let's face it, you know, you had guys like Juan Manuel Marquez fighting at welterweight, you know, for money. You know, he started at featherweight and had big fights. I mean, You know, let's look at what we've seen more in recent decades. You know, like what
Marquez is a great example too.
Right, and what I'm getting to is this: is if you are Gervonta Davis becoming a star, and, you know, even if you still have things you want to accomplish, you know, look, you know, to some degree, even see it like with a Canelo. here's where I'm getting to that I have not heard people discussing this week or even today. If I'm Gervonta Davis, why am I going to try to cut down to 130 pounds now? You know, why in my even life am I going to want to do that? He just fought at 139, you know, and three quarters, got a huge win. Why is he going to want to cut down to 130 pounds or, frankly, even 135 pounds? Look, if he's got more money at a higher weight, and then he doesn't have to bother making that lower weight. Like, that's what I even look at, you know, with a Mikey Garcia fight. Same for Mikey Garcia. Look, he's doing the same thing. Why does Mikey Garcia want to cut weight down to 135 pounds or 140 pounds? The only reason these guys would do that at this stage is if they were proven to be ineffective at a weight and had no fights they could get at the higher weight. In other words, why make their life that difficult? I don't hear anybody discussing that, but I think that's just a natural factor for any human being, any athlete like that, that's got to make weight. You know, I mean, if you're completely ineffective, like, in other words, you know, if Gervonta Davis, you know, fought last night at 140 and Barrios blew him out, you know, sure, then he's gonna have to go back and cut weight to 135 or 130 pounds. That didn't happen. It's not going to happen again, I don't think. So for those kind of reasons, like, you know, why is, even though you can speculate he'd be more effective, you know, Mikey Garcia beat Jesse Vargas. You know, why is Mikey Garcia going to cut down to 135 pounds if he just beat a guy like Jesse Vargas? You know, he's not gonna do it. I mean, so, you know, Canelo is never going to fight at 160 again. I mean, it's just not, you know, so I think people need to look at these things. And look, I mean, it would have been a great thing if boxing wasn't set up the way it is. And I'm not blaming PBC for this, because everybody does their own thing like this. I mean, let's face it. But, you know, boxing being set up the way it is, you know, Davis, you know, at 135, Ryan Garcia, Teofimo Lopez, Devin Haney, those guys are tremendous talents who might have great careers. I mean, they're not that now, but, you know, when you're talking about like a future Four Kings thing, at least the potential was there. I wasn't offended, because it's potential really we're talking about. But that's not going to happen. They're all with different promotional entities. You know, basically, it's not going to happen. You know, it's unfortunate, but it's not going to happen. So let me just qualify with that, yeah, if it was going to happen, then, you know, maybe you'd want to see Davis. But again, look, the money tends to, you know, welterweight's been one of the traditional, more glamour divisions. We just talked about the, you know, the Four Kings series, you know, that Showtime had. You had Leonard start, of course, at welterweight. Hearn started at welterweight, two of those four guys. And then Durant fought at welterweight. You know, that's where more money is. I think it's going to ultimately be, you're going to gravitate towards that money.
Yeah, and I know there's a lot of fans out there, the best need to fight the best and all that, and of course that's what we want, but you got to be realistic too. And with these three platforms, and really four, but PBC's two of them, you know, they're big deals, relatively speaking. And so obviously the networks, if you are even somewhat of a commodity in a main event fighter, they want you to put the fights on their network. You know what I mean? That's the whole deal. ESPN top rank, Bob Arum was saying it once he got that thing. And then you cross over when you can. You know, if Spence and Crawford could do $1.5 million, that fight probably would have already been made. So people have to just, you know, focus in. So if you look at Tank, right, I mean, let's keep him at 140 for a year or two, let's just say, before even going up, okay? So Top Rank clearly has 130 plans that Gervonta isn't in. It's clear. Oscar, Jamal and Stevenson, and not right. You know, along with Burchell and all the stuff that they've done to get it where it is right now. So they're not going to all of a sudden stop and be like, hey, they're probably going to want to produce who was ever best out of that, and then be like, all right, Gervonta, we got a bunch of belts, let's do it or whatever. So they're busy. 135. Well, they talked about the rematch nonstop. So Bob's going to be stubborn with that rematch, whether it happens or not. So that's going to be the talk for the rest of the year. So that's not there. Clearly, I think Floyd would definitely put him in with Ryan Garcia, but it does seem like the Garcia side doesn't necessarily want to do that right now. So he's not ducking Garcia. Now, Devin Haney, that's the tough one, but here's the thing. Devin Haney isn't going to be a free agent. He basically kind of is. I think Eddie has one more option on him. But this is where Devin Haney has to make the decision. You're not going to get Teofimo this year. You know, Showtime invested in you. Then you went for more money on DAZN. I get the more money aspect. Before Linares, you know, the opposition wasn't great, obviously. But, you know, Haney could go back to Showtime, right, potentially. I don't think they'll offer him as much money, but, you know, for that fight, it would be a big money. Maybe he could get there, fight a fight or two, and then be able to fight. I don't know. But, you know, Ryan Garcia seems to be someone they'll match him with. But 130 and 135, top rank's busy already. That's just a fact, basically. So that's not even an option. People are talking about this stuff, but it's not an option for the stuff we talk about. And at least they are putting their fighters in with each other. We need that more at Matchroom at 160, to be quite frankly. You know, DAZN and Eddie kept talking about Charlo needs to be a DAZN fighter to get a fight at middleweight. Well, you know, one of the best fights they put on as far as competitiveness was a PBC fighter in Derevchenko and Golovkin. I mean, Jacobs and Canelo right out the gate, that was a good quality fight. But ever since that, at 160, they hadn't done a whole lot. And if Andre can't get the damn fight over there, and he's over there with Golovkin, Charlo's not going to get it. So let's go back to Tank, though. So Tank, at 140, Regis Prograis, Robert Easter Jr., I'm not sure if that would work, but it might. And Mikey Garcia at 140. Garcia's even talked about fighting Regis at 140. So people are going to freak out when they hear this. Like you said, some of these hipsters and the best got to fight the best. But realistically, you're not going to always fight one and two every damn fight. It's impossible. Just in general, even if you had them all. And then once you get undisputed, that means you got a lot of belts where you got to let one go here. You got to take that mandatory here. You got to do this and that. It gets a little weird. But if you can get Mikey Garcia, I hate to tell everybody, but if you want to count 130, 135, and 140, Mikey Garcia is the biggest name besides Ryan Garcia in the batch beyond, obviously, Gervonta Davis. So I've already heard people discredit John for obvious bias reasons, and the media hasn't helped with this, but already discrediting a Tank Mikey Garcia fight at 140, and we're over here like, sign us the F up for that fight.
Yeah, and what they're missing, too, is, I mean, you know, PBC's obviously their promotional philosophy, which is really starting to shape up differently than all the other promotions at this point, is they're going to build a ton of depth, which the other promotions aren't focused on. You see Top Rank cutting guys recently. And they're going to focus on a couple of divisions. Now, I think Top Rank's going to do that too. And I'm getting to where I'm not against that because, you know, like I've been saying for a few years, even though we want the best to fight the best and ideally we'd like to see cross-promotional things, you know, some parts of boxing had gotten so bad that let's just have the best in-house fights first and then,
yeah,
like you said, let them sort it out. And when you get one guy in each division emerging from the best in-house fights, then maybe look at the crossover. But let's get the best in-house fights first. I actually appreciate that Eddie Hearn's been honest about this, but I actually think it's not really a great philosophy going forward. You know, he doesn't want to put, like you said, he doesn't want to put his main guys in with each other. I mean, he's saying openly he doesn't like doing that. And then the way he tries to kind of cover that over, which has become kind of a joke in the boxing world, but the truth is he always says, I've made this huge offer, you know. I've made this huge offer to Jermall Charlo. I made this huge offer to Deontay Wilder.
It's three times what you've made. I don't know what you made, but it's three times what you made.
You know, Hearn, it's almost becoming comical. You know, I mean, like, Hearn might really need to, you know, think about changing philosophies, like, you know, increasing his depth and having some of his own guys fight each other. I'm not saying he's going to do it because, again, you'd think top rank.
You know?
Yeah.
They've basically
right.
taken the HBO 115 and moved it to the zone.
Right. I mean, so he's done that some there, but, it, you know, with probably figuring, you know, with lower weight fighters outside of the hipsters, there's not that much. There's just not, you know. There's not that
right.
much value, except, you know, maybe in their home countries, things like that. You know, it's a worldwide sport, not discounting that. And we watch it. You know, I'm not saying we don't watch it and enjoy it, but you're looking at that marketing type thing. I mean, I think PBC, from all the hard work, you know, from 2015 on, even with the ups and the downs, and you're not saying even now there's not still downs, like we've talked about some cards not being as good and things like that. But, you know, you're right. They've got, the way it stands now, they've basically got two networks to satisfy, you know, because you've got Fox and then you've got Showtime, which even though they haven't used the CBS, you know, outlet, you know, they are owned, you know, same company as CBS, you know. So, you know, two major networks they've got to satisfy. They've built up the depth to do it, but yeah, those networks want payoff. And, you know, with Top Rank, ESPN wants payoff, you know, with ESPN and ESPN Plus. So, you know, Arum really, his credit, detriment, whatever you want to call it, I remember at the time I didn't like it that much, but I think it's with modern boxing, with these promotional things, kind of where we've got to get to, like I said, first and have the best we've got there is, you know, Top Rank really, you know, with all the Pacquiao-Bradley stuff and things like that, you know, they had Pacquiao, you know, Marquez, Morales, and, you know, a lot of great fights there. But you know, that was all in-house. I mean, Top Rank just kept running their guys in-house. And you know, I almost look at them as the pioneers of that. So I know they're capable of doing that. But what surprised me recently was, you know, what they have the ESPN deal is that they cut roster. So that was an obvious sign they're not going to do it with depth. I mean, it looked like they were going to do that with the heavyweights, but then they didn't follow through on it after signing these guys. Now they're cutting guys. So I think they're going to, go back to that philosophy. You know, they just re-signed Lopez apparently. And, you know, now we're hearing about Lopez Lomachenko too, which I think they're going to do. So I think Top Rank's going to probably, and you made a real good point, Chris, about, you know, Herring, Valdez, Stevenson. I think they're gonna take what they consider their top guys, and they're gonna just fight them off. Now, you know, they've got no dance partner for Crawford. You know, that's the problem there. And rumors are he's got one fight left. So, you know, I don't know. You know, if they'd want to make the Taylor fight now. You know, they talked about Zepeda the other night, and it literally got shot down by the boxing Twitter. I think they literally did float it because it was. It was their kind of sources that put it out there, and I think literally it was so poorly received. They said, "Maybe we're not gonna do that."
Right.
So they're trying to figure out, you know, that last Crawford fight. I don't see myself, and it's not with any bias towards any entity, just for the reasons we're talking about. PBC's got to go with this high American exposure, satisfy two networks. I don't know with all the welterweights that PBC has, and like I said, I think Tank Davis is one step away from that mix with selected fights. Why Crawford, you know, he's what, 34 years old, why he wouldn't want to move over, you know, unless he just has loyalty and likes Bob Arum and Top Rank. It's not impossible. You know, I mean, you know, with these guys, I mean, sometimes they have a good relationship and, you know, they feel like, oh, it's worked for me over all these years. I'm going to finish it out with these guys. So I don't know what he's thinking exactly, but, you know, all the credible reports are he's got one fight left, and that's where they're trying to figure out who this fight's going to be. But to me, I don't know why he wouldn't want to go.
They're putting him on ice till October. He fought in November. They're putting him on ice just to mess up any kind of fall plans or anything, you know?
Yeah, so, I you know, if they do, and, you know, it doesn't mean that they might not want to re-sign him, too. If they do re-sign him, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, what they'll, you know, I don't know exactly what the plan will be, but it looks like top rank,
right,
shrinking roster, but they've got to satisfy ESPN. I think you probably will see their top guys fighting each other, who they keep. I would think that's going to be their plan. And PBC is going to have a big roster and fight their guys off. And then, you know, that's where Eddie Hearn, you know, he's going with a, you know, decent sized roster, but he's not fighting. He doesn't really want to fight his guys off. And his roster is not on the PBC level. So, you know, he might have to think about changing his philosophy a bit. I mean, I don't know if they can cross, you know, Golden Boy doesn't really have enough left. You know, they've got Virgil Ortiz and Ryan Garcia, but not a lot else there. You know, so they're going to have to find people to fight. That's what I wonder too. What's going to happen with, you know, what Golden Boy's got left? You know, who are those guys going to fight?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Be interesting to see how this works. I mean, if Crawford doesn't at least sit down with Al and talk about this, it would be nuts. I mean, if he could go to the zone too, because maybe they'd offer him more money, but then it goes back to, okay, well, you're over there, but are we, like, you know, Golden Boy is over there, so there's Ortiz, but we don't, their deal is all weird. Ortiz may not even be there next year because of the DAZN thing. He's
right.
Trying to get a deal with Triller. And so that's not even a done deal, but that's still just one fight. You know what I mean? And so if he goes and signs a multi-fight with DAZN, hey, get your money. But it's like, wow, dude. So you really, like, it would be pretty shocking if he did it. But let's move on to the co-feature. Erickson Lubin, who back in 2017 got caught with an early shot, and sometimes early knockouts can be just, you know, they can be just really misleading. Sometimes we've seen a guy like Badu Jack, speaking of, come back and, you know, have a lot of success in his career, have a very solid career after that. And you know, Lubin just kind of been grinding his way back slowly but surely. You know, he obviously bit off more than he could chew, at least, you know, I know it was the first round, but he got caught, whatever, you know, it is what it is. I mean, going into that, when you look at the odds, it was basically a 50-50 fight going into that Charlo fight, but he's worked his way back, and Rosario, power in both hands, good pop, good quality fighter, win, lose, or draw, the guy just, like I mentioned earlier, went J-Rock, Charlo, and now Lubin, so you got to give him a lot of credit. The second and third round, they were both kind of getting it in to the point where Lubin definitely got buzzed in the third round, did recover, ended up dropping and stopping him in the sixth round. So that was, you know, obviously it was like a combination and I think a jab actually that had Rosario, you know, down on his knees and gloves and whatnot. And did he touch his glove, or it was the knee, right? I know he got up. He definitely got up. He was out of it. And then, obviously, I think it was a left hand to the head that dropped him again. And you know, before he could get up, they stopped it and whatnot. But he was, I mean, they were both kind of going back and forth early in that fight, second and third rounds. Not so much in the fourth, if I remember correctly, but, you know, Lubin got the job done. Rosario definitely needs to kind of now be rebuilt again, just because, you know, there's no point in taking another big fight again. He should kind of rebuild on some undercards and whatnot, but what'd you think of the performance, the fight in general? And it does seem like Lubin, almost every fight does get caught with something big. Everyone gets caught with something, but something where you're like, oh, wow, he got affected by that one, even in his last fight. I mean, really almost all of his fights. What'd you think of the performance? And then, you know, should we go one more big fight before he faced? Well, if Castaño wins, it'll probably be a rematch with Charlo, but if not, then that'd be a fresh opponent. But do you want Lubin second part of the breakdown, do you want Lubin to maybe face one more guy so it can even add more spice to the Charlo fight? Because that is a strange rematch only because of how it happened in the first round, even though we all know first-round knockouts can be very misleading.
Yeah, I thought this was one, you know, you don't always get it right where it plays out the way you think it will. I mean, this fight was one that kind of went the way I thought it would. Both guys ended up being hurt in the fight, but that Lubin just had a little bit better skill level and ability to deliver his pop, and Rosario not being able to catch, and then that was it. You know, Lubin started strong, protecting his chin and using his offensive skills. Lubin's always been a little bit up and down to me, and he looked on his game offensively, and he was protecting that chin. Then where he made the mistake, like you said, you know, his chin is definitely questionable. You saw Gaucher hurt him, even though he had the Charlo first-round KO. Then you saw Gaucher buckle him badly, and Gaucher, despite a big KO in his last fight, is still, his career-wise, has not been a puncher. So Lubin started out strong, and he really rocked Rosario bad to the head. I think people are overlooking this too much. Right at the end of the one round early, Rosario looked out on his feet already at that point, but it just literally was at the bell. And then Lubin made the mistake of, you know, a lot of guys do. Yeah, you don't want to be over-anxious, but then again, you know, you're at your least risk when the fight's over and you just knocked out the other guy. In other words, that's ultimately your least risky situation to be in, and sometimes you see fighters forget that. So, in other words, you had a guy out on his feet. He starts backing off because he doesn't want to be over-anxious, and then he gets caught. And that's where you saw really good corner work by Kevin Cunningham. He reminded me of, you know, the great Emmanuel Stewart, because not all corners will do this. That he gave him the right advice saying that. He said, what the hell are you doing taking your foot off the gas? You know, keep working this guy with your combinations. You coasted. You shouldn't be coasting here. You had the guy hurt. And he picked it back up, and then he was just basically blasting Rosario from that point on when he picked it back up and, you know, went to the body, some nice body work, and you know, Rosario was done by Lubin. I thought he did what he had to do. Yeah, I mean, you know, since he did go out in one round against Charlo, let's say Charlo were to look real good against Castaño in the win, and Castaño can definitely fight. That's going to be a good one. You know, yeah, do you want Lubin Charlo next, even though he could have it? I agree with you. Might not hurt for Lubin to have one more big KO before that, just even for marketability and his own confidence. But of course, if Castaño beats Charlo, you know, and then he's going to get Castaño or something. It's a different guy, different style. Might be okay to go right to that. So, you know, we'll see. 154 is another one of the weight classes. PBC has a lot of people, but good performance by Lubin. But one thing, I think you've got to adjust with what you see. I've learned that as I've gotten older in boxing and life. You want to keep firm with your opinions, but you also want to adjust. You know, I've been talking the last few weeks. I'm adjusting a little bit around these PBC 154 guys, mainly Julian Williams and Jarrett Hurd. Now, you know, Rosario blew out Williams after the Williams-Hurd war. You know, in other words, that was, to me, fight of the year.
True.
Ton of punches landed by both guys. We know Hurd has not looked good since then. Now you see Rosario getting blasted out by Charlo and Lubin. A lot of circumstantial evidence to me now, building. You know, Jarrett Hurd, I think they're both in their 30s now, you know, even just hitting 30, but still Hurd and Williams. You know, I think that they just took a lot out of each other, you know, in that fight. You know, Williams had also been KO'd by Charlo before that, Jermall Charlo, and Hurd, a lot of people have pointed out, you know, he had another fight of the year with Lara before that, and Lara's got underrated pop. You know, it's not the way he likes to fight, but he can hurt you. And, you know, I think that those two guys, you know, obviously were warriors when they fought each other. I thought it was the best fight of that year. I personally, you know, people disagree with me, but I thought it was a better fight than Donaire and Inoue. you know, I think that those guys have seen their best days. I think we can – and, you know, look, it was an elbow, but Julian Williams had to pull out of the fight. He was supposed to have against Mendoza Saturday night. I think we can now put into our calculation, at least the operating theory I'm going to go on now that for me is a change, is I think Julian Williams, J-Rock, and Jarrett Hurd, they really drained each other in that war. They both had a tough fight before that. They're now 30. I think that they've probably seen better days, and you know, not saying they might not get a big victory here or there, but I think that they're going to have some rough times, and they'll probably be fading more to the back part of the division or out of the top 10.
Yeah, it does seem like it's going that way. No doubt about it. It really does kind of feel like that. And that's boxing, man. It's a brutal sport, especially Hurd. You know, that Arislandi Lara fight, the Trout fight. I mean, I've never seen Trout land so many clean punches in a fight ever. But, you know, somehow he wore him down. The Harrison fight, too. That was
a lot of shots against Harrison. Yeah. Took a lot of shots against Harrison. Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of people love that style, but it does have a shelf life, and it's more like it's more like the shelf life bred in Europe instead of in America. It's not going to sit on the shelf for 3 weeks, John. It's going to be fresh bread, and then it's out. You eat it up, and it's done. Maybe a day-old bread you get to sell, but that's about it. So, yeah, we'll see where that goes. Overall, though, a great event. No doubt about it. I mean, obviously Tank, you know, we're talking about Minneapolis as a different city, you know, to you know, get into Atlanta like this, to tap into Atlanta like this now back to back against guys that are really not popular guys. I mean, Gamboa was more known on ESPN and HBO, definitely, no doubt. But, you know, that was years ago that he was even really in his prime. Speaking of guys out of their prime, but they got something going, as we know, with Gervonta. You know, obviously he can sell on the East Coast, no matter if it's Barclays or, you know, in his hometown or D.C. or whatever. He can sell in Atlanta. He can sell in California. I mean, the guy is and he delivers the punch, delivers the knockouts. You know, that flip that he did was pretty crazy off the top rope. I mean, the whole thing is just – people were definitely into it, and I know a lot of people wanted to tell the story about the WBA, and we all know that Josh Taylor is an earned, undisputed guy. We get it. But you know what? Probably 80%, maybe even more in that crowd, don't know who Josh Taylor is, and they know their guy, and his name is Gervonta Davis. Oh, he's got the belt. You know, the belts are so cheap, and as it is, I understand the hardcores on boxing Twitter getting pissed off. But, you know, there's plenty of interim, you know, IBFs and interim WBCs and shitty rankings like we talk about where, well, that's a main event fight, title fight. That's a worse fight than what we got right here. So, but kudos to Tank. We'll see where he goes. Like I said, if he can fight Regis next, oh, my goodness gracious. Regis, I love how Regis is going at him, too. He's like, hey, I'm going to shoot my shot. I'm going to try to get this fight, even if I got to call him a little boy and whatever. So we'll see where it goes. I'm not totally sold on that. I think if they were going to take the risk, it probably would be against Garcia because it would be do some pay-per-view numbers. But we'll see. Anything else from this card you want to talk about, or should we get to the Lomachenko card and his comeback fight from his second?
We can go to Loma, but I think, you know, Progre is with PBC now, but I just add why I haven't been talking about that fight is my evaluation on that is Progre would just be he wouldn't fit the risk reward for Tank right now.
Sure.
Doesn't mean it's not possible that Tank could beat him, but he's a puncher. He has skills.
Right.
You know, he's not at a point where he's a huge draw on his own or anything. And like I said, you've got those welterweight money guys around. So I think if he's going to take a 140-pound fight, I just – and Progre's been weighing in over 140 lately too. So, again, he's almost in that welterweight
right.
mix with PBC. I just don't think he fits the risk-reward. at this point. I think, you know, like you said, like a Mikey Garcia, even fighting him at 147 pounds where they both don't have to cut a lot of weight, bigger money, you know, bigger name, bigger money. Not the puncher that, you know, arguably more skilled, but even though Pro Gray has skill, but not the puncher that Pro Gray is. So less risk there.
And more money, like you said. And I'll say this, though. Mikey's power at 140 is different than it is at 147. And definitely 135, he had a ton of power. But he's no longer at that weight class, so it doesn't really matter now. As far as, you know, talking about, well, we had Rob Brandt, native of St. Paul, Minnesota, right across the river, the Mississippi River. He did get TKO'd. And speaking of a guy who looks to be a little, you know, shop-worn at this stage of his career, fighting some tough fights. This was a tough fight for him anyway. You know, we'll see where he goes there. But Aleem Hanala, whatever it is, he fought at great range, I thought. He definitely would kind of move in and out of danger using some angles. The straight left hand, when you look at power punching, I mean, it was pretty ridiculous, 65-9 and 20-5 or 20-3 to the body. So that was very dominating. A lot of people on Twitter and within the media. And, of course, the folks who love to only cheer for fighters from different countries who happen to be American as well. And, you know, cheer for whoever the hell you want. But, I mean, shit, we're adopting a Cuban tonight here in Minneapolis, so we're not saying you can't, but he is fighting here. But he looked good, Aleem Hanala, or however you say his last name. I thought he looked pretty good. I want to see more of him, of course. Lomachenko, though, laser-like left hand right off the bat, snapping Nakatani's head back early on. You know, he would have kind of more lead left hands as the fight went on, using those angles like he does. Then he started somewhere in the fourth round to get more to the body. The fifth had actually some two-way moments, but, I mean, several combinations in the sixth. I think it was a left hand that just starched Nakatani, like not to the mat, but it was pretty rough. And Loma just dominated the fight overall. I think it was several left hands to the head and body that ended up doing it. Nakatani was hurt pretty early on, like 60 seconds into that round. But just the fancy footwork, the pivot, the domination. Loma had his thing going on, and you called this correctly. I thought it was a legit fight to come back to off of a loss. I did favor him, and I picked him by late stoppage. But this wasn't a close fight at all, and you were one of not that many that really called that out as, well, hold on now. And I remember you saying, how many rounds did he actually win in some of these fights we talk about?
Yeah, I felt like I had one of my better weekends of feeling like I knew what was going to happen. You know, on Saturday night stuff. You know, we had a lot of upsets tonight, and you know, some of them with fighters you wouldn't quite have seen as much. It's with the exception of what, since you talked about it first, I'll get to that briefly. I was mad at myself for waffling, you know, looking at the Amakalala fight, you know, Amakaluli, Jonabek, he had boring moments, but he was coming on with KOs, you know, when we got on the show, and he's trained by McGirt. I felt like he was improving enough that, you know, I felt like Brandt was going to be in trouble. But then, you know, later in the week, right before the fight, I was looking at the odds, and Brandt was like a plus 245, and I was thinking, you know, one thing Brandt does well is he moves his hands, and, you know, Amakaluli, he can get a little dull, and, you know, even in this dominant win, he was doing that a little bit. You know, he gets a little overcautious with the amateur style sometimes. Maybe Brandt can out-hustle him, but it ended up being, you know, in the ring, a mismatch. You know, Brandt was trained by Derek James for a while, and then after I was waffling going with Brandt, I was looking and saying, he doesn't even have James anymore. You know, so obviously maybe, you know, James has got Spence and he's got Charlo. That maybe he was just thinking that Brandt, you know, doesn't have it. You know, let's face it, boxing's a brutal world, like you said, and that happens. So I was thinking, I don't know if I should be shifting over to Brandt. And Brandt looked done in there. I mean, he didn't look like – and, you know, he's had gutsy efforts. He had that big, Minnesota guy, like you said, of course, and he had that big upset over Murata in their first fight. But he just – either he was done, didn't want to be there, a combination of both, you know. I mean, even the punch stats showed it. You use punch stats for limited usage, but the guy wasn't even throwing punches. And, you know, and Amin Kalouli, the one thing he did do that he'd been doing when he was picking it up is he's got the confidence now in his straight left, the power straight left. He's been throwing it more, using it to put hurt on guys, and he's looked better since he's been doing that. And as that fight went on against Brandt, he was doing it more and more. And he ended up getting him out of there. And, you know, middleweight doesn't have a lot of depth right now. He's clearly shot himself up to the area of the top five with that performance. And you know, you don't want to – Brandt was fighting a good guy, but he's 30. He did get KO'd against Murata, took a lot of shots in that fight, in the second fight. I mean, he looked done. So he looked done. So there's a new guy on the scene, you know, with Janibek. And Brandt, future looks like it's going to be tough, even with the bottom half of that division being weak. And then Loma with Nakatani. Yeah, I think I got on the right – I do think I got on the right track of that one. And, you know, people didn't like me saying it after the fight, but like you said, Chris, I said it before the fight. I mean, you know, Nakatani, a tough guy. You know, he came right back against Verdejo, but – remember the guy that knocked out Verdejo to give him his first loss? He wasn't very good. With all due respect, you know, we got to cover
it's
it
true.
Before. He wasn't very good, you know. And the Nakatani fans, you know, and look, I'm on Transnational. I thought, you know, with the Verdejo knockout and going the distance against Lopez, I thought he cracked the top 10. But you still had to keep it in perspective, you know. You know, barely cracked the top 10, but I thought he cracked it. But keeping in perspective, right, didn't win, like, any rounds against, Verdejo or Lopez, you know. But he was tough, you know. He kept coming back against Verdejo. But remember, Verdejo was battering him around all over the place, too, before he came back and knocked out Verdejo. And then, you know, Teofimo Lopez, he wasn't in the fight. It's just everybody thought that including myself, thought, well, Lopez should just blow this guy out, but the guy was just tall, and, you know, Lopez was just having a little bit of trouble putting something together to get him out of there, but was never in any danger, dominated the fight. So then, you know, you had Loma taking him on. Guy's a contender at this point technically, but just hadn't shown the skill level. You know, he showed toughness. He showed grit and toughness, but hadn't shown the skill level. And let's face it, I mean, he didn't show anything against Loma. I mean, you know, Lomachenko is still tough, a skilled guy. I know that's got something to do with it, but Lomachenko's 33 now too. And, you know, coming off a tough fight with Lopez. And, you know, Lomachenko, I give him credit because what I like that Lomachenko did, and I like when Lomachenko, I see with him it's got to be a conscious effort to do it. It doesn't fit with his amateur style, but I like when he does it because it shows me he's trying to make those pro adjustments even now, even though he's been to the top of the mountain. You know, he came out power punching. In other words, I actually like when he does that, you know, he's kind of trying to make a pro adjustment. He's in with a guy that he overmatches skill-wise, and I like that Lomachenko did that, and then he ended up getting him out of there. So I give Lomachenko points for that. That was good. But, you know, people who then, after what you just saw, were still trying to say that Nakatani was this – you know, there were people saying that the next day on Twitter and things, you know, or that night, you know, Nakatani was this formidable adversary, and, you know, you give him props that, you know, he's a tough guy, but, I mean, he really didn't show any skill level Saturday night. I mean, he was just the proverbial punching bag in there. And, you know, Lomachenko took advantage of that, knowing what he was in with and just loading up with power right off the bat. And, you know, he did what he needed to do. Like you said, it looks like Bob Arum and Top Rank want Lopez, Lomachenko too, and they're going to give it to us on pay-per-view. personal, I mean, and I'm being fair, I'm not saying it's something that PBC might not give you if they had these guys, full disclosure, being fair, but with that understood, I personally don't feel like I really need to see that again. I think Lopez is going to take him again. I think at 33, I don't think Lomachenko is going to turn that around. I mean, he kept his hands in the pockets for the first six rounds for a reason, because Lopez has got a lot of speed and firepower, and early in the fight, especially, that was just something he didn't want to be facing. So I don't think that's going to change in a rematch. You know, people that think, oh, they're going to fight again and Lomachenko is going to open it up right off the bat, I don't think that's going to happen. So, you know, as long as provided Tio's in good shape, and you know, nothing happened to detract from him with this COVID or anything like that. So, but you know, Lomachenko did a good job and did what he had to do.
Yeah, I thought he looked pretty good, like you said, and definitely if you're going to go out there and, you know, have a comeback fight and then obviously try to build towards the rematch, you might as well have a performance like that. Any other items? You know, I didn't get a chance to – I had to work late last night, so I didn't get a chance to see the DAZN card just yet. But any other items you'd like to get into at all, or maybe talk about this this Pacquiao lawsuit thing, or any other items you want to touch upon here, John?
I'm not familiar with. I haven't read on the Pacquiao lawsuit yet, so I'm going to have to brush up on that. I did do a three device TV combo Saturday night, and so I had the DAZN card on as well. You know, some people are talking it up. I mean, again, I'm watching three at once. Full disclosure. But, you know, the Cordova guy that fought Cordova, who fought Martinez. I mean, again, you know, hipsters get carried away. I mean, just because it's flyweight and Martinez is good, I mean, he was fighting a guy that's 12-4-2, you know. I mean, who hadn't beaten anybody, you know, had some bad losses. I mean, you know, the fight was a mismatch. So, I mean, you know, even though Martinez is a good fighter, I mean, you know, it wasn't a good fight. You know, some of the undercard, Diego Pacheco was on there. Didn't think he looked great, really. I mean, he's another guy, prospect, but big guy. But he's kind of up and down to me already. And there's a lot of prospects like that. But and sometimes they're not the best prospects. That's the thing. We'll see. You know, we'll see these guys. We got to see it played out. But, you know, a couple other fights that were decent. But nothing else too much to mention there. But it's actually worth, you know, you want to talk about the flyweight just for a moment. It's worth you know, mentioning the Mexican-American Sandoval on Friday, and I took out Jay Harris, you know, the Brit who was ranked in the top 10, who had a good performance against Martinez and, you know, vicious body attack took him out. And it was actually a very impressive performance. I don't think it's overstating it with what Sandoval did to Harris compared to what Martinez did to him, that, you know, Harris did go the distance against Martinez and was given almost as well as he was taken. I mean, Martinez clearly won it and dropped him, but you know, Sandoval just handled Harris and took him out of there with a vicious body attack. He's only 22 years old. This is a guy you got to be watching at flyweight, and, you know, he's a Mexican-American. He looks to me to be capable of being at the top of the division. So, you know, Martinez has been kind of the flavor of the week guy lately, but from what I saw this weekend, I think, you know, were Sandoval and Martinez to fight each other. Now, I think from my understanding is Sandoval's got a Golden Boy tie-in now, that Golden Boy picked him up, but they're DAZN. You know, Hearn's got Martinez DAZN. If they put that together, again, they got to put some of these guys together. I would think Sandoval's got a chance to beat Martinez. So probably worth mentioning that. And then the only other thing I'm thinking, because it fits what we've already talked about, but, you know, when you look at where American boxing was in 2015, you know, HBO's old formula was starting to not work. They were, you know, they thought they were going with what was the best fighters, but even if it was foreign fighters that weren't necessarily that popular to Americans, they were going with them. Philosophy didn't really work. You know, PBC then kind of restarting things with trying to get things back on network TV, and then that kind of inspired Top Rank to get back to doing that. I mean, you know, it's not all perfect. It's not all, you know, butterflies and roses. But, you know, you look at all the boxing on TV now and building things back up in America. You know, you talked about Gervonta Davis, and of course there's plenty of others. We've gone over the Americans ourselves. I mean, 6 years later, after what PBC started doing, you got to say there's been a lot of progress in U.S. boxing. I mean, look at least all the Americans who are on the cusp of being stars at the very least. And, you know, you've got Wilder with a chance, you know, to pick up the heavyweight title, the lineal belt, you know, the mythical lineal belt. If he beats Fury next month, you know, Davis, the star, Spence is fighting Pacquiao. I mean, you know, slowly but surely, when you look at where American boxing was in 2015 and the sport in general, that's a lot of progress.
Yeah, it's true. And you know, Triple G is obviously in the downslope of his career. He can still put some butts in the seats. Canelo, obviously, you know, is there and has been there and got built up. He was already putting butts in the seats, got built up under Mayweather's card, then fought Mayweather, had some big fights. Obviously, those Dakota fight was huge, pay-per-view, same with both Golovkins. But when you start to look at the other names, as far as real deal ticket sellers, you look at the Wilders, you know, you look at the Gervontes, you look at the Spence, and it's and even tapping in, like we said, to Atlanta and then Minneapolis the night after and have, you know, healthy crowds, obviously a much bigger crowd in Atlanta, but, you know, pay-per-view is part of the sport and it does suck and we do get that. There's times that we complain about it, no doubt about it. And, you know, sometimes it's completely legit, like where you're like, nah, this just isn't for me for this one. It's not a good enough matchup or whatever. But, you know, back in 2015 and 16, the thing was, well, they have all the talent, the PBC, but they don't have any ticket sellers, and they couldn't sell a pay-per-view to save their ass. And, you know, we look at those featherweight, great, great rivalries with all those featherweights at top rank. You know, Pereira and Morales, you mentioned them earlier, and Marquez and Pacquiao. Those things weren't doing, you know, 500,000 and 600,000 and 800,000. In fact, it took a lot of different pay-per-views of mixing all that. Pereira would be on his own on pay-per-views, and those would do really low. And I'm not trying to rip anybody. I'm just trying to say that it wasn't a sentiment from a lot of the big members, I guess you could say, that work for larger outlets, platforms, that would constantly rip the pay-per-views. It would really be just the ones that don't belong there. But if it did 250 or 315 or 385 or whatever, there wouldn't be some kind of – in fact, I remember when I did a little research on this again, and I remember them talking about, you know, some of those trilogies, like, hey, it did 900,000 in the trilogy and saying that's a success and all that. And so it's just funny how they couldn't do any of that. You know, HBO has the talent. Top Rank has the names. These guys are just – yeah, they have more talent on their squad. But and it's just funny how now all of a sudden you look and it's like, well – you know, some of this exposure is clearly paying off, and that's why you do hope that Fox stays in the picture, because out of every platform, they do push the fights the most. That's just easy to tell. You know, once in a while, ESPN will do it. We appreciate it, but they really push it. So I appreciate you joining me, you know, on a late East Coast night, Sunday night. You have yourself a good night, man.
All right, Chris, great talking boxing with you as always. Have a good rest of the night.
Yes, sir. Take it easy. Have a good one.
Take care.
Yep. All right. And, you know, I am doing a show tonight as well. I don't know if I said that, but I'm going out of town tomorrow for a handful of days. So there was no way I was going to be able to do the show. So I figured why not do it tonight? So there is a couple of news items I'll get to. We didn't do the boxing Twitter segment. I got a couple of messages saying, you couldn't have read five funny tweets. I messed up the scheduling. I just realized that down the stretch Tuesday. That was Tuesday. I thought I had actually scheduled it for 6:30 central time, but I guess I scheduled it for 6. And so there was an extra half hour that I thought I had, and the switchboard was acting up a little bit, so it was showing one time, and then it would show nothing. I thought, that time's not accurate. Then all of a sudden it did. So I did my apologies to, Mark and Portland as well. Definitely didn't get to them. And for those who wanted to hear some more fight news or, the boxing Twitter segment, my bad. We mentioned Danny Jacobs for Jermall Charlo, but another one I mentioned a while back, and it seems like they're moving him to something because he hasn't fought anybody in 3 fights, and that's Arislandi Lara, who now fights at 160. Could it be Arislandi Lara? Wonder if he went Lara than Jacob. Those are still quality fights that I wouldn't be complaining about, but don't count out Arislandi Lara from getting a big fight. He had like those back-to-back tough-ass fights. Was this in 2018? Yes, it was. That Hurd fight and then the Castaño fight. And that shit was rough for him, obviously, especially his age. He doesn't have his legs like he used to. So he's in a lot of funner fights. But now he's fighting Canelo's brother, then Canelo's sister. No, I'm just kidding. Those guys can kick my ass. But, I don't be surprised if that pops up, okay? Speaking of the zone and middleweight, it sounds like Golovkin, multiple reports on this, Golovkin and the zone are having some opponent issues. Now, we all know the big unification fight on New Year's in Japan, and I get why they do it, because, Murata gets great viewership over there. There's a big fight over there, Murata, but that's not until, December 31st. So is Golovkin just going to sit around? When he fought last fall, or did he fight in December? I think it was early winter. So he's just going to sit another year to fight Murata? You might as well fight somebody in that. And it sounds like he wanted to do that, but it sounds like from the rumors that that DAZN is trying to push the Andre fight. If that's true, then kudos to, DAZN if they're trying to do that. We'll see if it works. They obviously they overpaid for Golovkin, clearly, thinking that they get the Canelo fight, but it is what it is. That's just a little bit of news when it comes to that. Some other news, there's a couple items that I'll get to. Casimir and Daenerys are now officially enrolled in VADA ahead of their August 14th unification bout. That's the headline for Jake Donovan. We're going to have Jake here on maybe next week, if not the week after. We haven't had him on in a little bit. I'm missing the Jake segments. We got to get that back. But he wrote an article on this, and there was a lot of back and forth with, Nonito Donaire's team, Rachel Donaire, the manager and trainer and wife, obviously. And they were going back and forth. Sean Gibbons, the representative on that side as well. We're going back and forth. And TGB, I believe, I don't think they're going back and forth, but I think they were part of the tag line when it comes to that, as Jake is talking about. But they're currently slated for August 14th, and it did kind of come out of the blue, right? But it sounds like they are now all set, according to Bada, Nonito Donaire, and John Casimir have enrolled in Bada testing for the August 2020 or 2021 bout. That was confirmed by Bada. Okay, subjects managed to steal headlines. Yeah, they went back and forth. They were kind of getting at each other. Rachel was saying, we're going to pay for it. We just want you to get in it. And there was a whereabout issue, and you do have to tell Vada where you're at when you need to tell them. And this has happened with the Charlo brothers before, where I think they were at a that presser or something for their fight. So we've heard a variety of guys go through this. So, but, you can understand why. The Donaire side was like, well, hold on, let's make sure you're signed in. You got to tell them where you are, what's going on. So that sounds like it is official, okay? And Gibbons, just, president of MP Promotions, he said he's been in, Casamure has been in the WBC clean program since 2017. He was enrolled and tested for the Anyway fight before it got canceled. And now he's enrolled for the Donaire fight. So that is, sounds like it is solved, okay? What is not solved just yet is a lawsuit filed against Manny Pacquiao and some other folks from a sports agency that was representing him or whatever. There's a breach of contract lawsuit, and they're seeking an injunction to block the fight. Once again, this is Jake Donovan on the scene, literally on boxing scene. He talks about how this Adi Attar, the company founder and leading combat sports manager, alleges that Pacquiao was advanced $3.3 million for a business arrangement that never transpired. Additionally, the legal team headed by boxing attorney Judd Bernstein, has filed an injunction in an effort to block the fight, the August 21st fight between Pacquiao and Spence. News of the lawsuit, which was filed Friday in Orange County, California, courthouse, was first reported by Lance Pugmire of The Athletic. So it was met with a dismissive tone by Pacquiao's legal team. The complaint filed by basically, they're saying it's frivolous. They want to interfere in Manny Pacquiao's upcoming mega fight, and it can and will fail for numerous reasons. That's their side of it, represented it on the behalf of Kinsla Witzman. So, moreover, Manny Pacquiao appears to have no intentions of fulfilling his contractual obligation. He never would have entered into any relationship with them. According to the lawsuit, Pacquiao, they connected last February. The sports management in Pacquiao, with the intentions of securing a four-fight deal, which that's kind of interesting right there, because I don't think too many people thought he was going to fight four more times. I didn't necessarily think it was just once, but then again, that was last year too, so that would give a little extra time, I suppose. Basically, it coincided with the platform debut of Mikey Garcia, and we all kind of thought that fight would happen. So that lingered in with COVID and all that, and Garcia even, he says, committed at one point that every time he believed the terms would reach, another party would introduce himself, claiming to guide Pacquiao's career. And we know that, Pacquiao does have a track record of signing something. And when there's money attached, I'm not saying he did it for this one, but it does sound like they lost. They're claiming they lost a potential relationship with Mikey Garcia as well. So at this point, it is tough. They do name Gibbons and other Pacquiao camps, others in the Pacquiao camp, who allegedly played an active role in steering the legendary southpaw away from DAZN and back to the PBC, with whom he had previously enjoyed a two-fight deal. So that's different, too, instead of a three-fight deal. So, we'll see where this goes. The promise from Pacquiao's legal team is an effort to disrupt the event will be met with swift and resolute justice. Should this matter actually proceed beyond Friday's filing in court of law, Mr. Pacquiao will vigorously defend his action. Yada, yada, yada. He's even talking about recovering attorney fees as well. But they're seeking a damage recovery of $3.3 million paid, the cost of associated with this proceeding. So whatever. I don't know where it's going to go. have no clue at this point. Whether it's legit or not, I do remember hearing about, you know, this guy and they were doing business with him or this agency and all that, the Atar guy. So I don't know where we stand. Like I said, you know, there is that story, or not a story, but it's a factual thing that they had to work out in litigation. That, you know, Manny, I think he got on a plane with Oscar and maybe Gomez, and they had like $500,000 or something, don't quote me on that, in a briefcase. And I was like, all right, I'll sign. And, you know, Manny's like, cool. And he was signed with Top Rank, and that actually led to arbitration that was 5% of Manny Pacquiao. I believe it was 5% of Manny Pacquiao's earnings went to Golden Boy. And, you know, back when Floyd was using Golden Boy a lot more, in some sense, that 50-50 fight never really was a 50-50 fight. It doesn't really get talked about a lot back then. But, you know, think about it. If the promoter that's on the side of Mayweather gets 5% of Pacquiao's, you know, income, then it's not really 50-50, 5-45 split, which that wouldn't go happen. Anyway, let's see here. There are a couple. King Tug, Nyambar, is that how you say his name? He was rumored to be filling in for Gamboa for Chris Colbert, who has a fight coming up this weekend. You know, I don't know if it's 100% official yet. It was kind of like swiftly like, oh, here it is. By the way, Micah Rivera and John Fernandez in a 10-round 140-pound. That's the co-feature. Obviously, they're going to show Gervonta Davis and Mario Barrios that this weekend as well. And I think they have that epilogue. I think that's what it's called, right, where they go over it. That's actually a pretty cool series. So Teofimo Lopez, more news, and then we'll get the boxing Twitter, then we'll get the hell out of here. Teofimo Lopez in George Kambosos Jr., it's postponed again, according to Ryan O'Hara from ringtv.com for a third time. And I think Lance Pugmire came up with this one first too, but it looks like that fight will get added to the September 11th Triller card. Oscar De La Hoya fighting a mixed martial artist, Vitor Belfort, which it's an exhibition matchup. And obviously we know that not only is pay-per-view dead, right, like Oscar told us, but, you know, he wouldn't do circus fights either. Don't get me wrong. Oscar is a fighter, totally different as a promoter. Sometimes I feel bad giving him crap, but, you know, sometimes it's like, dude, really? Even what he was doing with Canelo the other day, it's like, wow, really? When did Oscar De La Hoya go with the hard-ass tough guy role? Clearly, one punch, left hook, I'm out. We're mostly out. But when did he ever go with the tough guy role? I'm going to knock you out. Stuff like you're going to knock Canelo out? Okay. But it did sound like, I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but it did sound like Teofimo definitely was feeling the COVID, and I hope him and his family had to leave. His pregnant wife got it too. But they were talking about what they say, 90% oxygen, and how he, because, you know, we know he has asthma. We also know he did not the vaccine, and I think some kind of crazy number like 80% or something. Don't quote me on this one, but most of the new cases of COVID are the people that aren't getting vaccinated. And that's everybody's choice, whatever. I'm not going to get into that. But when you have asthma, an underlying condition, and then you postpone an event off of that, at this point where it feels like it's gone almost, right, in normal life, look at the crowd that we had, you know, I mean, look at the Canelo fight, 70,000 people. So, I mean, it's pretty crazy, but it's own. Kavanaugh, one of the main dudes over there at Triller, was saying that 45 seconds of shadow boxing had him almost collapsing. like he was really sick. And that's what threw me off when they went right to the August 14th. Like, well, dude, you got to give him a couple weeks to be good. And because he's got to shut all the way down, and then he's going to get a short camp now? I understand he just went through a full camp. That always threw me off. Maybe some of it as far as not putting it right in front of Pacquiao Spence and having – and to be honest, you know, I don't know what the ticket sales were. Kabanov makes it sound like it was a sellout. I don't think it was a sellout, I'll tell you that. I'm not going to go Leonard Ellerbe on it and say that they weren't selling anything. I don't know. We still got to know what Teofimo's gate numbers will be. You know, he has potential to be a big name, no doubt about that, especially in New York, Brooklyn and all that, and, you know, Madison Square. So I don't know all about that, but if he now, I don't know, it just doesn't look good when now all of a sudden you're going to put him on the co-feature or whatever. But there's also some news that Mike Tyson's going to fight Lennox Lewis. But he's gonna. He wants to do it on his own, that Legends Only platform. But Kavanaugh keeps telling people that we have a first and last, so we can see if we want to pay that money or whatever. And we know Holyfield was potentially supposed to be involved with the co-feature with Oscar and Belfort too. I don't know, but my guess is if it was sold out, where were they? Was it in that stadium? Was it in the stadium or an arena? I can't remember now where Teofimo Lopez was supposed to fight. Either way, you know, if they were going to sell out, you'd think that they'd just push it later. I know that – well, actually, didn't Bob say that his wife's pregnant? So maybe that plays into the date or whatever, right? But – I know it was in Miami, but you just think that if someone's going to sell out, you wouldn't just let go of that gate money. You know what I mean? But hopefully he heals here. Caleb Plant in Canelo, I remember Eddie Hearn talking about that fight possibly being September 18th. And a lot of people were like, why wouldn't it be the 11th? That's closer, but whatever, to the Mexican Independence holiday. But wasn't he saying September 11th and then it was supposed to be September 18th? Because isn't 18th is that the third week? I don't know. But anyway, yeah, we'll see where that goes. Hopefully he heals up. I think that's obviously the most important part, you know, because it's like, damn, dude, you know, you don't want to be doing that. So the scorecards, by the way, someone sent this to me. We're not of two scorecards for Barrios and Gervonta. The judges had it before the stoppage, or entering the 11th round. 96-92, 97-91, and 96-92. But that's with two knockdowns in there. The fight was much closer through the first six rounds. This is a boxing scene. 58-56 for Davis, and then two scorecards, 57-57-57. So, I mean, you know, that plays into some people were freaking out. But even in some of these, you know, oh, he swept the first four or five rounds. Like, well, even when you look at punch stats, Barrios, four punches, Davis, three, first round. Four punches, two, for second round. Five punches, three, you know. Fourth round, you can see nine of three. That was bigger. And then, after that, sixth round was a little slow, but then it picked up, obviously. But, I just didn't see six straight rounds for Barrios like some people were talking about. I don't know. This is according to Mike Coppinger. Teofimo Lopez is still recovering from COVID, his manager, David McWater, tells me, and he remains in his Las Vegas home. Lopez is still waiting to test negative for COVID. Tested positive today, and that was yesterday. So, I know his pops was saying he's good, he's all good. Well, hold on. You know what I mean? Let's hold on. Let's hold on to that. So hopefully he does get better, though. And someone told me that I have to watch Italian and Argumento. I'm going to have to check that out on my vacation at some point. I guess Bob was ready to put Inoue in with the Filipino Flash again, if in fact that Casimiro fight didn't happen, which maybe bodes well, you know, in general for what that could turn into. By the way, Victor Conte was in on all that Casimiro stuff too. He got all the way up in there, Bob. So, and I think Steve Kim actually broke the news. The Jose Zapata news, I don't know, like John was saying, I'm not really sure if that was 100% legit or not. We heard Ramirez as well, and it's like, huh, okay. Like, so he went from getting the winner of that fight to now getting the loser. So it's, and you know, it's no problem that Ramirez lost. Career's not over, obviously. But so his first fight at 147 after taking a loss to Josh Taylor is going to be Crawford. I mean, that's pretty intense. And if Taylor was able to do some of the stuff that he was able to do, you know, I don't know. I'd watch the fight, you know, but it's like, damn. I mean, that's what he's dealing with over there. Here's a source. This is from Ranger Rollins. A fight between former undefeated champion Danny Roman and undefeated Rais Alim is being discussed as the co-main September 11th to Fulton and Figueroa. Now, if that's real, that would be dope as hell. That would be, talk about a double friggin' header. Oh, my goodness gracious. That would be ridiculous, dude. God, that would be nice. Sounds like Clarissa Shields is ready for her second pro MMA fight with PFL. That's August 27th. So good for her, dude. That's I'm happy that it's going well for her. What else we got for news? I don't know. I don't think there's a whole lot. Oh, there was an interesting, you know, we knew that, the September 18th and the 11th has kind of been both ways with the De La Hoya stuff. Now that I think about it, Coppinger was saying September 18th, maybe it's 11th, but there's going to be 12-ounce gloves in that Belfort fight. So that, you know, clears it up. Regis Prograis, Jose Zapata, and Ramirez are some of that's Dan Rafael, October 23rd, by the way, for a Crawford potential fight. There was an interesting, what I was saying before I cut myself off, you know how Vada kind of didn't go out of business, but, it, you know, during the pandemic, it was on the low. Here's something from the BBB of C. The UK anti-doping. So this is Chris McKenna from the 1st of April 2020 to March 31st 2021. There were just 11 out of competition drug tests and 111 in competition drug tests carried out by them. There were 57 out of competition tests by GB Boxing in the same period, one by ABBA. So you do with that what you will. That's a report that I didn't make up, okay? Somebody else did. No, I don't know. That's, you know, it's been a little funky, and it makes sense because obviously fights were off for a handful of months, and, you know, VADA, some champions were even fighting. Some champs were out for a year. Some people, you know, some fighters were out for like 15 months, 16 months. So, and we've known that the out of competition 365 is still not as stringent as an Olympic style testing. You could say Olympic style testing, but if it's only for camp or a couple of weeks before camp, that's great. It's a step in the right direction, but let's calm down like it's like, oh, yeah, for sure. Okay, let's get to boxing Twitter. Let's get the hell out of here. If, oh, shoot, I almost forgot. Oh, someone said, why wasn't I at the event tonight? Because I actually was denied a press pass for the very first time at the Armory. I've kind of come up with two reasons. That is now down to one. It could have possibly been my my article I wrote about the PBC main events, where I very fairly went through a variety of items, talking about their budget and certain things, but I didn't go down the route of narratives to just be anti-PBC. The title was, you know, Fox Main Events, Where's the Beef? That's an old saying, an old 80s, maybe early 90s, I don't know, it's when I was a little kid, commercial. I think it was Wendy's, Where's the Beef? Well, you know, the main events have been all over the place. And I went over a variety of stuff. It was very fair. It wasn't a hit piece. It wasn't a clickbait piece. We talked about a lot of things that we talked about in the segment here. So that was back in April. And then all of a sudden I get to, maybe it was a mix-up. Maybe I didn't get the email. I don't know, but I'm not the type to cry over spilt milk. I don't know exactly why it was. But, you know, like a preview article wouldn't make sense because, one, you know, I released it on Sunday for a reason because it was a Sunday night fight. But, two, my prediction articles come out either Friday or Saturday. So, and I'm already, you know, credentialed before those come out. So that wouldn't be anything new. They could have listened to the shortened show where we didn't talk about it as much. Maybe they took that and ran with it. I don't know. But we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, so that addresses that. Yes, I did get turned down after basically every PBC event that's come to Minnesota, even the Toe-to-Toe Tuesdays, I've been able to cover. And I'm appreciative and all that. And shit, I'll support the, you know, the Armory in general and the fights coming there and buy a ticket. I'll sit in basically the same spots that I would anyway. But we'll see. I think I'm going to get it next time, but we'll see. You never know. Okay, boxing, Twitter, and then we're gone. If Davis wants Lopez, he needs to accept 35% and sign with Top Rank. These are the rules established by his fan base for Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence. If Deontay Wilder beats Fury, he has to sign with Hearn and accept 35% to get Joshua. So they're talking about Crawford having to sign with Al Haymon to fight Spence. Although, so you're saying Gervonta David or Teofimo Lopez is a bigger name and a better ticket seller and more of a commodity at this point than Gervonta Davis? Is that what you're saying? That's why they'd, he'd have to take the 35 and sign with Top Rank? I mean, that's pretty out there, bro. That's pretty out there. Oh, D-Style, this was hilarious. Floyd had a bunch of chains on last night looking like Mr. T. And he said he got to wear all his jewelry now because they'll get robbed in his house because his house has got robbed multiple times. That's a good one, D-Style. Gervonta has a huge casual fan base, and it's a very annoying. Josh Taylor unified all the major titles at 140 in late May when he beat Jose Ramirez, thanks. But y'all don't know that because y'all don't know shit about boxing, which is why y'all think Tank won a title last night. I mean, welcome to the casual fan base, dude. Like, hello. Do PBC fans watch their own boxers? Robert Easter Jr. is levels every round that they fought. It blows my mind that Davis is getting all this love and hype at 135 and 40 divisions when the PBC had a boxer on his roster, Robert Easter, who would completely outclass him, wouldn't even break a sweat. Well, they did bring him home once, and it was a good-ass crowd. Easter Jr. fought a lot of quality fighters in a row. Defensively and being too offensively was his issue. sit there and say it's a wrap. Well, he's at 140 now. But if you are saying that Easter Jr. is levels above Gervonta Davis, people did watch him and pay attention to him. Some guys are just bigger than other dude. I mean, it took Mayweather a long time to get up to Oscar, a long time, like 10 years. And he had to beat Oscar to get there, you know, so it's just weird. Tank Davis corner cheated, got read the scorecards and had a fourth man in the corner. They didn't cheat. The fourth man in the corner, at least you can have a good argument with that or whatever, but he didn't get the scorecards read to him. He kept saying unofficial. And yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, there's times where, like last night at the presser, some of the things he was saying was okay. Some of the things he was saying piss off people, like, hey, we're keeping it PBC, right? We got plenty. We got the A side, so if you want to come here, come, you know, do what you want to do. And I know that bugs people. I get that. But he's straight up telling you that. You know, and we just went over 130. Top Rank wants to do that with their own fighters. Look what they've done at 135. They faced Lomachenko and Teofimo against a bunch of guys. Have they fought PBC fighters? No. Well, I mean, Gary Russell Jr. for a belt, that was a mandated thing. But, you know, his third fight. But, you know, other than that, without the mandates and all that, there's really not a lot of cross-promotion. So it is what it is. This is Ryan O'Hara again. Sources, rising welterweight prospect Paul Kroll will face Justin Deloach on the July 31st as a part of the split telecast. I think he beats FS1 in the main event, Michael Coffey and Gerald Washington. That's right, because Vito Melonecki is going right back in against Martin for the rematch in an 8-rounder. That's the co-feature. And where Cafe is, I really like that Gerald Washington fight for him. And once again, if we're talking prospects in real tests, at least on paper, maybe their best name and stuff like that, whatever it is, I do like that. I do realize Washington just got beat handedly by Charles Martin not long ago. But, you know, he also knocked off, what's his toes to beat? I mean, Hellenius. He actually did that at the Armory. Knocked him out in a competitive fight that Hellenius, a lot of people thought Hellenius was winning that fight. So I'll take the prospect versus vet or prospect versus prospect. They're not going to all turn out like tonight in the night of the upsets. But clearly what we saw through the time buys and just in general, that selling ads are not the easiest thing to do with boxing. And when you continue to put $1 million fighters, even if it is just $1 million against another $1 million fighter, it's hard to raise the money on the ads consistently. I mean, you know, how much we heard Max Kellerman, Bob Arum, the whole team at ESPN broadcasting say they got the biggest budget, $120 million or $100 million a year, and they, you know, before the Fox deal, it was just biggish. It was bigger than HBO and Showtime combined, and all this money. They talked that money talk, but then look at how much money they put up and don't put up because they don't want to lose money. They're going to ship that. It sounds like they're going to ship it overseas. That Lomachenko, Teofimo Lopez rematch. Who knows though? But yeah, I mean. Look at this. This is fightnews.com. Leon Lawson, the third, was a minus 700 loss. Omar Juarez was a minus 3,300 in loss. And then Apoche, F.A. Apoche, was a minus 800. I mean, that is nuts. Gallimore closed at a plus 450. And he won the fight. And like I said, kudos to the judges who mostly got it done. This is Henry Wade. If Terrence Crawford doesn't sign an extension, he gets the worst opponent possible. Sorry, that's how it worked. That's how it works. Despite fake news from Dweeb Loser Reports, there is no opponent, but it very well could be someone like Zapata. That bum has no sources. you know, he's right. He's probably very right on the, you know, on doing it. You know, having to extend to get a quality fight. But he did extend, and how many qualified fights. Anyway, y'all told Floyd to move up and fight GGG, but wouldn't tell GGG to move up and fight Andre Ward. Facts. It's funny how much pressure Charlo gets to move up, but oh, no, let's not even talk about it, man. Let's not even talk about GGG having to move up. But let's compare him to B-Hop and Hagler. Mario Barrios has stopped or knocked down every... Oh, wait, that's an old tweet. Someone sent me that. Oh, here's a funny one. Legendary 122 fantasy matchup. Inoue and Conlon. Who wins? It's like, dog, let the guy get a quality freaking fight before it's a fantasy matchup. What the hell? Inoue is everything you want in a fighter, unless you're going to fight him. That's a great tweet. Charlo Montiel shouldn't have been sanctioned. What the fuck? It's disgusting. I'm disgusted. He's facing a guy who got KO'd cold. Jesus, what the fuck is boxing coming to? What a joke of a fight. It shouldn't be sanctioned. Well, Montiel showed up, didn't he? It just goes to show you that we're really not these matchmakers that depend on matchmaking to make a living. It's a big difference. Have your opinions on a fight. That's obvious. Pick a prediction and tell you why. That's obvious. But to go so overboard and then not admit it, come back and admit it, you know, that it's wrong or that I was wrong. Jermall Charlo just went life and death with Montiel, who got knocked out. So yeah, he went life and death, dude. That was life and death, bro. Okay, one more, or maybe two more. ESPN continues to be terrible for boxing. Didn't televise the fight of the year because of college basketball or baseball. Delayed Inoue off everyone's DVR. Well, first of all, it's almost like they're working against themselves in the entire sport. I remember watching my Timberwolves in the playoffs years ago, 2004, against the Denver Nuggets. And we couldn't get to the damn TNT game because I think it was the Pacers and the Pistons were like in three overtime. I think that's when Tayshaun Prince blocked Reggie Miller from behind pause. And we're seeing a score. I mean, this happens in all sports, dude. So it's called contracts, dude. Called contracts. It's contracts. By the way, there was some misinformation about Jermall Charlo and Brian Castaño, and that it would be at the Barclays. That is no longer the case. It's going to be at the AT&T Center in San Antonio. The tickets range from $50 to $250. It's a good place for it. That'll work. All right, I think that's about it. Somebody sent me something here. Oh, we're not going to read that. What the hell? Yeah, we're not going to read that either. Okay, one more. I did want to. Okay, this is Ashley Knuckles. Shout out to you and A Puncher's Chance. Thinking about unplugging from boxing. Would love to keep doing breakdowns and analysts, but seems like I can't commit fully anymore. Plus, the fans love gimmicks or agenda-based commentary. They don't want the real. That's such a great tweet. We're going to end it on that one. All right, guys. Enjoy the fights coming up on Saturday. I think it's King Nayabar, King Tug, and Chris Colbert, the co-feature. Look out for that. Like I said, for those who want to watch the HD version, it will be Gervonta Davis and Barrios, the rematch. You know what I'm talking about, the rewind this Saturday as well. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. Like I said, enjoy the fights. Enjoy the 4th of July weekend as well. And I hope that you guys take it easy. I'm going out of town tomorrow morning, so peace out. Peace.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel you have the upper hand. So now, when as you fight, let's say you fight 4 or 5 years of straight survival, the bullshit, the holdback, and when you become a world champion, like, you know what, that made it. That will show you it's this. So I'm going to get any dollar worth of what I deserve. Why? Because I'm the world champion.